Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, February 8th, 2016. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140. Participant code is 385-698. If anyone would like to email a question, send it to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can see their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds support National Liberty Alliance effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, we're going to start tonight to take a look into God's Word. Tonight's scripture is, reading is, 2 Samuel 22, verses 1 through 23. Which, by the way, this scripture was put up on our page, in the news page that we put, for those who don't know, we have a very special news page of what's going on out there in Oregon set up. If you highlight news and you click on Malheur Wildlife Refuge Update, you'll get a lot of information. Also, and we'll make this announcement a little later on, and we'll continue to make this announcement, that all of the evidence that we gather together as a grand jury will be put up onto this page. We will be calling together a grand jury very, very shortly. I don't know whether shortly means a week or two, but it's coming up soon. First, we have to get all the evidence we need before we can discuss it, and we're not really going to discuss it. What we're going to do is just going to vote on it. Everybody is going to be responsible for taking a look at the evidence. The evidence will be put up again on this page. People should be reading this page from top to bottom, clicking on what's here. There's some video up there. There's going to be a lot of video up here soon. We've got a lot of transcripts and different things, and just different things we're collecting. And we're going to discuss potential indictments. And we may discuss some other potential remedies that we might have that we'll pursue. And we'll start revealing some of the enforcement possibilities and things of that nature at a later date. Okay, God's Word, again, 2 Samuel chapter 22, verse 1. This is David's song of deliverance. And again, this scripture was put up on this page underneath Lavoie's picture here and some information and some videos. And David spoke unto the Lord the words of this song in the day that the Lord had delivered him out of the hand of all his enemies and out of the hand of Saul. And he said, "The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer. The God of my rock, in him will I trust. He is my shield and the horn of my salvation, my high tower, my refuge, my Savior. Thou savest me from violence. I will call on Jehovah, who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from my enemies. When the waves of death compass me, and the floods of ungodly men make me afraid, the sorrows of hell compass me about, the snares of death prevented me. In my distress I called upon Jehovah and cried to my God, and he did hear my voice out of his temple, and my cry did enter into his ears. Then the earth shook and trembled, the foundations of heaven moved and shook, because he was wroth. There went up a smoke out of his nostrils, and fire out of his mouth devoured. Coals were kindled by it. He bowed the heavens also and came down, and darkness was under his feet. And he rode upon a cherub and did fly, and he was seen upon the wings of the wind. And he made darkness pavilions round about him, dark waters and thick clouds of the skies. Through the brightness before him were coals of fire kindled. Jehovah thundered from heaven, and the Most High uttered his voice. And he sent out arrows and scattered them, lightning and discomfited them. And the channels of the sea appeared, the foundations of the world were discovered at the rebuking of Jehovah, at the blast of the breath of his nostrils. He sent from above. He took me, he drew me out of many waters. He delivered me from my strong enemies and from them that hateth me. And they were too strong for me. They prevented me in the day of my calamity. But Jehovah was my stay. He brought me forth also into a large place. He delivered me because he delighteth in me. The Lord rewardeth me accordingly to my righteousness. According to the cleanness of my hands hath he recompensed me. For I have kept the ways of Jehovah, and have not wickedly departed from my God. For all his judgments were before me, and as for his statutes, I did not depart from them. I was also upright before him, and have kept myself from mine iniquity. Therefore Jehovah hath recompensed me according to my righteousness, according to my cleanness in his eyesight. That was 2 Samuel chapter 22, verses 1 through 25. It's got 51 verses in there. Maybe we'll read the second part next Monday. Okay. That brings us to opening up I want to talk a little bit, well, a few things. Let's first talk about our newsletter. We've been sending a newsletter out, and I see Jan has put it into a PDF attachment. I don't know whether this is the first time you've done this or not, but anyway, so a lot of information. People should be taking a look at that newsletter and understand what's going on, what we're doing. We are rapidly approaching critical mass. Quite a bit of membership growth has been happening lately, and things are going on everywhere. Just want cover a couple of things. On Monday, of course, we have this 9 p.m. Meeting. A lot of our new membership may not even realize we have a Monday night meeting, so we should shoot out a couple of messages, very simple, concerning this Monday night meeting, Jan. Throughout the week, for the new membership particularly. Maybe at least once a week, just a shot that there'll be a meeting, a conference call Monday, just something simple, and then keep eye out for the newsletter, which is usually, I think, sent out on Saturdays. Right. Anyway, Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we have jury administration training for anyone that's interested. Basically, what the people are doing right now is learning to write papers, and there's only one way you can learn to write papers, and that's by reading other papers. Getting a feeling for it. There's no real way, I don't think, to teach anyone to write papers other than to see papers written and kind of get the gist of it. Wednesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, this Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, not every Wednesday, but this Wednesday, we have a special meeting of all federal district leaders. We're really going to push forward this campaign for justice that we did start the earlier part of this year. Matter of fact, I think it was January 4th, was a Monday, our first meeting. We made clear that this year is the year of liberty. This is the year to campaign for liberty. So we pulled together a leadership, a federal district leadership, at minimum one person per federal district. We have covered every single state now, so we are ready for this meeting to discuss exactly what is going to be the workload of this group. It's everything pretty much being done from your home, so to speak, but, there's organization to be done. There's preparations to be done. We're growing at a phenomenal rate, and we need to be able to control that growth. We all are upset about what's going on, and at first, the first thing we want to do is we get angry, and we want to do something about it. We want to fix it. But we have to restrain ourselves and bring ourselves to a point where we have to come to bring a sense of honor, a sense of justice, and a sense of mercy from within us. And we're not going to be like them. We'll give them a trial before we bring any kind of judgment upon them. And it'll be a trial by their jury. And they will decide innocent or guilt. But it seems that they do not want to bend. The servant has taken over the house, and they refuse the master access. We are going to take that access. We're going to do it peacefully. We're going to do it lawfully. We're going to do it by the Constitution. And we're going to do it through critical mass. Critical mass is really starting to move, and that's where it's going to be. I believe in my heart, my soul, this is the year. So anyway, Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in this room, special meeting for all federal district leaders. And anybody who would like to participate may come. It's open to anyone. We hope that if you come, you're going to really participate. Sign up to become a district leader. We need more than one district leader. Okay, so please, this is a call to action to all state coordinators and county organizers and members. Come. It's time to take the nation back. It's time to prepare for that process. Let's see. So Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, there is a sheriff's meeting. Okay, sheriff's committees. The sheriff committee is meeting. Anybody who wants to get involved in that, anybody with law enforcement, military background is really very much welcomed and hope to join us. People who are running for sheriff or any sheriffs amongst us or any law enforcement amongst us, that's a meeting that you should come to and get involved and join that committee. We have about 12 committees. I think at least six of them are pretty much active. I'll have to see with Gary where we're at with that. And maybe you can make that clear what that is. But we do have about 12 committees. We need a lot of people to man some committees and lead some committees. And maybe there's other committees we haven't thought about and people can propose and we can get other committees. So let's do that. And finally, don't forget that Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time is Bible study. We're doing Harmony of the Gospels. Now, that has been on hold for the past couple of weeks because of Oregon. We've been so focused on Oregon that we haven't been able to prepare the Bible studies. And, you know, for every hour of study, it takes 2, 3, 4 hours of study to prepare for that 1 hour study. And so to find that time at this moment in time is difficult. Until further notice, that's kind of suspended, so that everybody knows. We won't be meeting this for Sunday, hopefully next Sunday. And if I know by next Monday, then I will announce the fact that we will be having Bible studies again as of the following Sunday. But I will announce that on a Monday. We will send out emails to let people know that that we have recommenced the Bible studies. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about compatibility, or what we're doing. Anything anyone else is doing is incompatible to what we are doing. Nobody is doing what we are doing. We have really put a lot of time and effort into studying the problem, studying history. Not that we've exhausted that. We're always in the process of studying and learning, and from time to time we make adjustments. But we're doing what we believe is really the most sensible, logical, and right thing to do. And we believe that the way we're doing and the process by which we're doing it by is correct. There are factions that have broken away from us and have started different things, and God bless them. Hopefully they're successful in achieving the same goal, hopefully, that we're achieving. But sometimes I question whether their goal is the same or not. If you don't come with a sense of honor, you don't come with a sense of justice, and you don't come with a sense of mercy, and you don't have patience, and you don't pray on the Lord. I mean, a lot of people claim the Lord, but they don't really pray upon the Lord. They don't really have that relationship. I think most people realize that. Most people who claim God are, you know, hypocrites to themselves. They there's a lot of hope, and hopefully the time that God is working inside them to draw them to Him. I know there was a time that I was in that category. I believe I've come out of that category. But again, we all struggle with our relationship and what we should with God and what it is that we should be doing. It's the difficult thing in this world to stand for the Lord. But in any event, there are a lot of people out there doing things. And because they are not putting up the principles of common law, which are the principles of God, which are the principles of natural law, which is the principles of the Bible. Because they're not putting that up first and foremost, I don't see how they can succeed in what they're doing. Certainly they won't get the blessings of God on the one hand, and of course they'll only become them. And that's what we want to be careful of. I always pray that we don't become them, that we don't act with vengeance and anger and hatred and quick to violence or anything of that nature. We have to do this peacefully, and of course we will defend ourselves if and when that time comes, but we are trying to prevent that time period from coming upon us. I have a question here, and this might give a good example of what I mean of compatibility. The question is, I have many court opinions throughout the years, even as recent as 1953, that says that the citizens of the United States is synonymous citizen in the of the federal government. That opinion is undeniable. Every person that fills in voter's registration is required under penalty of perjury that they are in fact a citizen of the United States. That means that everyone serving on a current jury is a federal citizen, and most everyone listening tonight are voters and have made that declaration. My question is, the people sitting on a common law grand jury cannot be federal citizens, correct? That's a question. Will you have to screen for citizens of the state they live in? Has this issue been dealt with? And yeah, I think this issue has been dealt with, maybe not directly, but indirectly, and it might even have been dealt with directly at some point in time. I am a citizen of New York. I am a citizen of the United States. They can claim ownership of a language and of a word. They can make any claim they want. It's nothing short of fraud. As a matter of fact, in order to be naturalized, Congress has been given that power in Article 1, Section 8, where we read to establish, this is one of their powers, the Congress shall have powers too. Establish a uniform rule of naturalization and uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies throughout the United States. So they establish the uniform rule of naturalization. So when someone becomes a citizen, it is the federal government that sets up the process within the federal courts that swears these people in. That's the process. Now, when they're sworn in as a citizen, they have the choice of being a citizen of any state they want. And in theory, they are a citizen of every state. When I go to New Jersey from New York, I am totally protected by all the rights any other New Jerseyan has. Plus, I have the rights of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, that is, particularly. My unalienable rights, protected by the Bill of Rights. When I continue and move through the states, and I go into Pennsylvania or I go to Ohio, as I cross that line, I become no different than any citizen in Pennsylvania, no different than any citizen in Ohio. I have all of their rights, which should be equal to all of the states. And so we are citizens of every state, so to speak. We may live in one state, and we call ourselves whatever state that might be. But we have the option at any given moment in time to move to another state, and we don't have to file papers with anyone. We don't do anything. That's the uniqueness of the United States of America. Now, they play their games. They can play their word games all they want. It doesn't fool us. We know the truth, and we really don't care. I don't care. They can say whatever they want. It's not true, because we'll call it a fraud. We're not going to go in their sandbox and argue the case with them. That's what they want. You sound like a nut to begin with when you do that. Let them sound like the nut, telling us that a citizen means something else. They're not going to bring that up in court. Let them tell me because I signed something with a driver's license or a voter's thing, let them tell me that, oh, you've signed everything away. You no longer have any unalienable rights. You've given away, which, by the way, they're unalienable. It can't be given away, can't be taken away, can't be sold, exchanged, nothing. You have it. You can't rid yourself of it. The only thing you could do is not exercise it. That's the only thing. And that's your prerogative if you don't want to exercise your right. But it cannot be taken. The moment you decide to pick it back up is the moment you can pick it right back up and continue on, no matter what you had done in the past. It's irrelevant. And everything they have done is a fraud. We're not going to give them any merit. And that is the key to one of the things we are doing here with National Liberty Alliance. We give them absolutely no merit. They are organized crime. These people are criminals, part of an organized crime syndicate. And they can say what they want, they can claim what they want, they can deny what they want. It doesn't change the facts that they're criminals and they belong in jail. And by God's will, they will eventually be in jail. We'll see how that goes. That's not our decision to make, at least not at this time. But those of us doing what we're doing, we definitely will not be sitting on that trial jury. None of us can. We're already biased. But we will open that up to the people. And now, we as the there's only one sitting grand jury in the United States that we at National Liberty Alliance has put forward to bring out. We have created the processes to establish all of the necessary juries for every county. We have organized and brought together unified state grand juries in every single state. And then we have brought together all of those counties, all of those states, to come together as the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury has only one job in mind and in focus, and that is to deal with the subversion of the United States of America from enemies, both domestic and foreign, right inside our own government. People who are servants that have taken over the house. That's our job. Everything we do here at National Liberty Alliance is to work and drive towards that point, to get our day in court. That's a national day in court that affects every state, every county, affects every person, every elected individual, to bring them back under the chains of the Constitution, as Jefferson says. So that's what our job is. And until that job is done, we have over 5,000 members at this point and climbing rather rapidly, I might add. We, all of us collectively, come together and sit on the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury in order to make decisions concerning this subversion against the United States of America, which is we the people and our Constitution. That's our job, and that's what we're going to do. And if it takes a month, if it takes 6 months, or if it takes a year, or if it takes 2 years, we will continue to sit on that grand jury as one across the nation. We have organized all together as one because that's the only way we're going to defeat these people. We cannot be divided. We can't have 50 grand juries. We can't have 3,133 grand juries trying to fix things. We have to have one. We have to spearhead our way in. I do believe that Oregon is that spearhead. I do believe Oregon is that chink in the armor. I do believe that Oregon, when we hit critical mass, which we are rapidly approaching, that this spearhead will come right through that chink and the people will enter into the courts and they will not be able to stop it. I think a lot of the judiciary already know this. Only the stupid ones, the dumb ones, continue to try to play games by ignoring they all ignore because they really don't know what to do. But they try to make a few statements silently, not on the record. They don't do anything on the record. They're not that dumb. So, But it's a matter of time. They're not going to be able to stand up. I recall the first day in court that we had some many, many years ago. We came in numbers. We flooded the room, the courtroom, standing room only. And the judge lost composure almost. And everything he did was in our favor. Of course, he never had another hearing again. He couldn't have that. And he took his time in order to, throw us out of the court, so on. But it frightened him. And it should have. And it will. We have a lot of different plans on what we're going to do, but okay, again, events will decide what we're really going to do because we really don't know what the events are going to be. We don't know the future. So it's really in God's timing, in His hands. But we got a little different ideas to do if this happens or if that happens or if the other thing happens. But it's going to happen. Matter of time. So getting back to this question, I think it's clear. Look, it's all about fraud. And that's the big difference about us and the other people. They haven't done their homework. You know, some people have looked into different things, and they made the big mistake that I made in the beginning. I trusted what I was reading on websites. I trusted that these people knew what they were talking about. They sounded like they knew what they were talking about, at least from my perspective. Today, they don't. I know they haven't got a clue, because I've researched. And many of us have researched, and we know the difference between what we're doing and what they're doing. They're breaking the law to save the law. That's a contradiction. God will never bless that. I promise you, God will not bless that. And if God does not bless it, they're not going to be successful. We are fighting an impossible battle. We, the people, at this point in time, we really cannot really take these people down. We can't really win here. Only by God's mercy, by the finger of God, the action of God, could this happen. And that's why we're always waiting on Him. People have pushed us many, many times to go forward here, to go forward there. But we knew that wasn't the principal thing to do, so we didn't do it. Maybe it will be the principal thing to do at a later time. I don't know. We'll have to pray for wisdom on that and see what the events are, and what we've accomplished, how far we've come, and if that is the next step. I don't know. But we've refused every one of those pushes. And I truly believe that most of those pushes were enemies pushing us into a direction to sabotage what we're doing. Not necessarily that the people themselves pushing us were the enemies, but they were being handled. We've seen people who claim to be something and appear to others who don't understand this to be something. And we see what they're doing. We know what they're doing is wrong, and the people who are following them don't know it's wrong. And we look around and we see who's there, and we see the handlers clear as day. We know that they're there to make sure that they drive this force in different directions. There are Pied Pipers out there to draw the people into a different direction, a direction of violence, a direction of internationality, a direction of doing things that like putting liens on judges and different people. Even going as far as possibly and potentially as arresting people and putting them in their own homemade prisons. I perceive those kind of things might be erupting. I don't know that they are, but I think they're heading that direction. I've heard to certain talk, and you put this together and that together and the other thing together, and that seems to be where they're going. We have nothing to do with that. Nothing at all. We've made it clear on the front page of our website, and we will make it clear in the court soon of who we are, what we're doing, what our positions are, and what we do not do. But we'll work that out as we go in the next week or two. Okay, let's see. Gary, can you look around for JP and JP? Let me go into nobody. Go into the Q&A. I'm just looking for certain people. I'm going to call into the Q&A if they have. JP, do you have any announcements or anything you might want to share? If you do, hit *6 and come into the queue. And if there's anyone else out there that has something specific on the national level that they want to tell everyone, please let us do that. Let's see. 971, is that you, JP? Let me unmute you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hello?
Is that JP? No, it's not JP.
No, it's not JP. Oh, who's... sorry.
Okay. All right. Let's see. 231, that's not JP, is it? Is this JP?
Yeah, JP's on this line with Jan over here in New Haven.
Okay.
JP?
Yes, I'm here.
How you doing, JP? Is there anything you wanted to announce or anything? I know we talked earlier and you're going to be doing some work, and I did get a note from you that you're going to be sending me something. But is there any help you need or anything you wanted to mention here tonight?
Yeah, we need to make an effort. I have received so far, sorry, there was a typo on the newsletter. We have 7 states that upgraded their sheriff from the new elect for 2016. And I have no way of verifying which of the 50 states have had an election as far as the sheriff are concerned. So it is your responsibility to contact me and to let me know if there is any update or not. I cannot guess the work. So this
so
is
everyone,
your
and you know what we will do is this, is we're going to have the meeting tomorrow with the leadership of the federal district leaderships. And, you know, we have representatives, quite a few of them in every single state. So maybe collectively they can piece up the work you have done. Each state can take their own, and they can go out on the web and discover on whether anybody has changed election, anybody has been elected different than the sheriff. They'll check the work on the sheriffs. That's what they'll do. That's one of the jobs we'll give them. And we'll let you talk about this on the Wednesday night call, okay?
Okay.
And we will get, you know, one of the reasons why we're going with federal district leaders is because we realized, and, you know, we didn't know this in the beginning. This is where we really belong, is on the federal district, not on the state levels. And we get into the federal level, we get into every state level immediately. So that's key. And you get into one federal level, you get into one federal district, you get them into all immediately. So that's key realization. Also, it's much easier to control the influx of people if we do it from the federal district level. Eventually, it'll be done in the state level. And remember, federal districts is the state level. All state coordinators should become a federal district leader. All county organizers should become a federal district leader. A lot of the workload that they will have is all the same, so they should all become that. They should remain as their county organizers. They should remain as their state coordinators. I know a lot of the state coordinators remain as county organizers, and very much so. But a lot of the members that have not chosen to be any of those positions, you know, you should choose to be those positions. Wednesday will be the day that you can make that choice and let us know, and we'll help you make those changes on your membership so that you can take control of that. Okay, so JP, is there anything else, or we'll just handle that part on Wednesday as far as the sheriff is concerned? Is there anything else?
No, that's it. We'll talk about it then.
All right. Thank you very much.
Sure, you're welcome.
Thank you. Okay, so let me just go back to Jen, did you want to say something?
Yes, I have a couple comments. One first about the kickoff meeting for Wednesday night for all the federal district leaders. We have about 135 of them, but we still have maybe 15 that are missing, 15 districts, because some of them have two or three or even four district leaders in one district. So we do still need some. Also, I compiled a list of email addresses so we can keep in contact with all the district leaders. And I sent out a mass email on my own server over the weekend. So if you volunteered to be a district leader and you didn't get an email with the announcement for the meeting, please email me at jan@nationallibertyalliance.org and give me your name and phone number so I can add you to the list so we can keep track of you. Because of the Wednesday night meeting with the district leaders, the courtroom observers session will be canceled. And in terms of the IRC researchers, we have seven or eight so far working, and we have like 55 to 60 audio files, video files, and documents that we need to go through. So we really do need some help there as well. If you want to do some researching, dig in and get down to the bare basic facts, that's what we're going to be doing with that group. This is as opposed to the writing group. And that's about all I had to add.
Okay, thank you, Jan. I don't see Carl on the call. Is Carl on the call? Does anyone know?
He had a conflict, I think, tonight.
Okay. Maybe you could talk with Carl. Have we not created a category within leadership roles for the federal district leadership yet?
I don't believe we have. That's why I made up one of my own.
Okay, talk with Carl about creating that and then flip the button and automatically put the ones we know right in there as leadership, and then they'll immediately be on the email abilities right off
our
website.
Hey, John? You got to think about this.
Okay.
What you're asking for is creating 90-something roles.
No, and only one role. Only one role. Federal district.
And now it's one role as, and so there'll be one role as district leader?
That's it, district leader.
Okay.
We have one role as state leader, one role as district leader, one role as county organizer.
Yeah,
and we have some other roles that we've created. We might want to delete some of them or whatever, but, you know, let's sit, why don't the leadership get together and decide what roles we want to keep and what we want to fortify and build up and what roles we may not necessarily need that are duplicated by the other roles. So figure that out and let's execute it.
Okay. In addition, I mean, we've already gotten we've gotten rid of a few roles, so that would be a good meeting to have.
Okay. Yeah, you guys can figure it out and just do it. But we do know that we need district, we need state, we need county. Those are the most important. And then, of course, whatever committee, not all the committees need a role, but certain committees do maybe need a role. I don't know. You'll have to discuss that and see the difference is whether we need it or not. Okay?
All right.
All right. Anything else you have to share or anything? I guess not. Any other coordinator out there, national coordinator, has anything to share or wants us to unmute anyone that needs to share anything particular before we get started? Going once, going twice, three times, you're out. Okay. Gerard, are you here?
Yep, I am.
Okay, put your fat fingers on them little buttons and be careful.
Yeah.
You got it. I'm in the background.
Okay. We're going to do the Q&A. I just want to say there is a lot of stuff going on throughout the nation. A lot of research, a lot of rallying. A lot of constitutional law enforcement are really starting to pull together. Looks very encouraging. Although I can't comment on some of the stuff that we're doing for the grand jury stuff, it looks like the nation is waking up, and it looks like the constitutional law enforcement has decided to band together, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing at the right time. Because, you know, our time is coming and we will need them. And it looks like when we do need them, that maybe they'll all be on board. And that's what I'm hoping for. So it's looking very
encouraging.
Well, there
are two things that we all need to be doing concerning what Gerard is talking about in order to be successful here. And one of that is to walk as righteous as we can in all our decision-making concerning what we're doing here with the grand juries. And number two, pray mightily unto God. Everybody should be in prayer. And every day people should be talking to the Lord to have mercy on this nation, to have mercy on the God's people here, and to bring this insanity to an end, if it be His will. So let's keep that in mind. Go ahead, Gerard.
I'm going to put out another thing that I came across today from, I don't know if it was Robert who gave it to me or who, but, you know, there's still four people up at that wildlife refuge holding on, and there is certain support groups, but the thing that happened, one of the guys up there actually was able to get a phone call out, and he claims that this was the PPN, which is the Pacific Patriot Network, he said they're compromised. He said they're telling lies about them. And that's unfortunate because they provided a lot of the security. And I had heard also that, you know, some of the people that were involved in this thing were under their security. Well, if they're compromised, that's exactly what took Ammond out, was the fact that he was he had people there that had compromised him. There's a lot of people that are going out there traveling across the country, a lot of patriots. There's a group right now that has a 50-acre site that they're inviting everybody to come and camp and stay there because, you know, people are starting to mobilize and do protests and rallies. And that's a good thing because that's what we need. You need this Gandhi effect. You see, one of the things that some of the people don't understand is that they say, well, how come you're not in the court? How come you're not doing anything? How come you've been 2 months, you have no results? This has been going on since the 1800s, and we're now fighting it, and it's not going to happen overnight, and it's not going to happen with just us. It's going to happen with the U.S., all of us, And this is a people thing. You need the Gandhi effect. You know, when we go into the courts, we got to go in. I don't care if we have 7, 10, or 30 law enforcement officials, or one for that matter. He has to come in with a force of people. He has to have people in his he has to have constituents of his own county, and he has to have constituents across the nation, because that's the only way that we're going to be successful. And it will happen. And I think it's going to happen with more than just one, believe me. But nevertheless, you have to be careful and you have to keep your eyes open. This is a nationwide call. Some of this stuff is more pertinent to the people that are driving around out west, that are local, that are willing to get in a car on a weekend and drive 300 or 400 miles out there. You have to be very careful, you know, who you're talking to and who's doing what, you know. And so we have lots of groups, but there's agent provocateurs in those groups. So you have to be careful about who you're with and what you're saying. And look, you know, they indicted Pete Santilli. Now, Pete Santilli, hate him or love him, the fact of the matter is they needed an alternative media guy to go after, and he was it. I mean, he was kind of an easy target, but nevertheless, I think that they have a representative for every one of the Patriot movement, and that's what they're using this Bundy case for, because they want to crush the militia. They want to crush the alternative media. They want to crush the constitutional and the patriots, and they're going to use this case to do that. You know, they're not talking about the Hammonds anymore, because that Hammond case, it stunk to high heaven, and they knew their goose was cooked. And so they're using this case to label them all as subversives and terrorists. So just be aware of that, you know. And when you go out there, I mean, we even had one of our members, when they pull you over, they ask you questions. Are you driving or riding? You know, they want to know if you're a so-called, quote-unquote, sovereign citizen. And the deputies asking the questions, they don't even know the meaning. You know, that Southern Poverty Law Center has told them these things, and they implement them, and they don't even realize what they're doing or what they're saying, how they're acting as useful idiots. So anyway, that's basically what's going on. Just be careful out there. Be careful who you get with. You know, there's a lot of wolves in sheep clothing, so just be careful, you know. The thing is I think it's going to take another 30 days or so, and a lot of that stuff's going to go away. I think they're going to be found out, and we're going to distill down to the real group, to the real meat and potatoes, and who has the pure word, and it'll become very evident, you know, at that point. So we're waiting for that, and hopefully that transitions in a peaceful manner anyway. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and open up the question and answer.
Well, before you take your first question, Gerard, I'd like to take this moment for a, you know, forgive me for a father, for I may have sinned. I have found Judge Anna, as she calls herself, and now this Judge Doucette, to be a very confusing subject. And we've always made sure that we've kept, you know, Anna's stuff off of our site, because it only confuses and dilutes our message. We have a member who's very upset right now because I removed a thread of you know Anna von Wright's communications, and I don't believe that communication belongs in the NLA, because our site, the NLA site, is for NLA. And should I leave that kind of communication up on our site?
No. Let me put this in a nutshell. What she is doing, I hope she's successful in what she's doing. I hope her heart is in the right place. I don't know her heart. I know my heart, so I don't know hers. But nevertheless, what she is doing is not compatible to what we're doing. to allow any of her stuff onto our website would only confuse people. You know, there's a lot of other stuff people have asked me. Well, why don't you have this up there? Why don't you have that? Because it's too confusing. It has nothing to do. We're not going to codify the common law to begin with, and that's one of the problems we do have. We're also not going to yield to international groups or movements or juries or whatever, courts. We have nothing to do with that. They're not courts of law per se. They're not driven and controlled by the king of the court, nor do they have a constitution. So you can never trust what that court's going to do. Also, we don't have judges. We don't need judges. Judges are only for equity courts, and they have their place, and even those, to some degree, they have to operate according to American jurisprudence. But if there's a common law court, any group that is building up a judgeship and marshals and things of that nature is going down the wrong path, and it's something that's going to get them into trouble and possibly get them into jail. And why would a common law court be looking for judges? We'd be looking for jurors, and we'd be looking for the people, not a judge jury, as we do have with the United States Supreme Court for the purpose of equity courts. They can make no decisions inside of a common law court. Once a jury makes a decision, even the United States Supreme Court can't overrule it, can't change it, can't do nothing about it. Unless, of course, that jury somehow violated the unalienable rights of an individual in that court, and that comes up to the hearing of the Supreme Court, of course, then they can intervene. But other than that, they cannot intervene. If a jury decides that they're going to hang somebody, or put them to death by injection, or whatever, and put them in jail for 20 years or life or whatever it is. Well, that's going to be held to the letter, because, and the United States Supreme Court cannot change that. So any group that is really gathering together judges, I don't understand what they're doing, because they're not creating a common law court. A common law court are the people. And they don't hold the title. They don't hold the judgeship title. They don't take a sworn. They don't swear oath to the Constitution. Although they do, the judges swear them in. I think that's a big error, and that's okay. We can swear in, but it doesn't affect us. You see, what the jury must do is take a vow to God. Okay, and that's the king of the court saying we're going to act with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, and we're going to stand on principle. And that's all it takes. It's that simple. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. When people understand that, that qualifies that individual, no matter what knowledge they have or lack of knowledge they have or lack of common law. It's all irrelevant at that point, because if they act in principle, and they act according to justice, honor, and mercy, and they make the decisions on the facts of the case, you can't go wrong. How can you go wrong with that? You can't. We don't need judges. So that's a major mistake that they're making. I know they're not going to hear that. I think there are other groups doing the same thing. We're not going to go anywhere near that. We don't need that. Also, we're not going to go into the back room of Denny's. We're going to go right into the Article III courts that we, the people, paid for to put there, and we're going to make sure that Article III courts are run, which is common law and not chancery. So anyway, that's that with that.
Her work
is not compatible with us, so we cannot put anybody's work up on our website that is not compatible, that's going to not find harmony with what we're doing. We'd be confusing people, so we can't. And we will continue on this path.
Yeah, I appreciate it, John. I was looking for absolution. Thank you.
Gerard, it would be nice if you unmuted yourself. Gerard, be nice if you unmuted yourself.
Well, while Gerard is...
I just lost...
You lost what?
Skype twice. I had... Skype is going down on me.
Oh.
I don't know
why. Well, you're
up
there in the third world, that's why.
I just had to redial twice.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm just only... I'm only one-third of an hour away from you. No. It's coming down. I didn't hear anything that was going on. I'm sorry. I didn't want to comment on these other people that you were talking about. Number one, judge or a governor or anything like that. it's totally outside the procedures of the Constitution. You don't just vote yourself or fill out some paperwork through the post office or some other fugazi method and claim that that's what you are. Now, I understand that they think it's desperate times for desperate actions, but the thing is look at the other thing is there's no due process. So you add all this stuff together, and unfortunately, you know, we're calling for a currency reset and all this other stuff, and it's going to have a vacuum, and something's going to get sucked into it. And I believe that there's powers that be that want to be sucked into that. They know, look at our establishment that are corrupt. They know it's time for them to put a new face on, and that's exactly what they're going to do at the right time. And they need chaos to do it, and then they're going to make order out of chaos, and they're going to get their new world order. Now, even if you were right, like let's say there is a method of becoming a governor of a state with nobody voting for you, which kind of really goes against everything that America stands for. But let's say that we had some kind of a method that you could actually do that. Do you really think that the people are going to believe that you're credible? I mean, you're really reinventing the wheel. You're taking the Magna Carta and you're running it through with no due process. The accused don't get to face their accusers. I mean, and John has said this, that's what the IRS does when they go after you in rem. That's what the towns do when they take your properties away in rem. And that's what they're doing. They're going after people. And they're going after in rem. And they think because they send this thing out, say, you have to answer me within so many days. Well, let me tell you something. No, you don't. You know, the only way that you have to answer that in 45 days is, okay, you didn't answer it. Now they need to go to a court of law, and they need to get a summons through the court and get legal and lawful law enforcement to summon them to the court. And the court will notice them, and you have proof of service then. Just because you send some piece of paper out and say, I demand that you answer me, and if you don't, I'm going to sue you for $1 million. That's not how we do law in America. I mean, just think about it. How do you think that there's jurisprudence in such actions? It's ridiculous. It completely guts the Sixth Amendment. And look at everybody. Better get back and take the constitutional course. That's the problem. I think we should send those people a constitutional course and beg them to take it so they can see the error of their ways. Because really, that's what they're railing against, and that's the truth. It's very simple, it's very basic, and it's fundamental, and they are throwing the fundamentals out. So I think that we beat this subject to death, but that's, you know, that's on top of everything else that John just said. So we just have to be careful, and, you know, a tree is known by its fruits, and you're going to see what kind of fruit comes. You know, if there's bitterness there, and if there's ulterior motives and money and all that stuff, it's going to show up, and we're going to know. Everybody will know. Anyway, I'm sorry, Gary. You were saying something, and I didn't hear if you had finished what you were.
Well, that's all right. Actually, John jumped in, and we are in agreement. In fact, I'm getting a bunch of Skype messages thanking me for removing Judge Anna's. In fact, I have a hard time calling her judge now that I've actually learned what she means. They basically are filing papers with the county. I guess maybe I should go down to the county and file papers that I want to be a prince. I don't know. But they're going down and filing papers that they want to be judges. And now that I've learned, because I mean I could not track down Judge Anna anywhere as a judge. And I got the sheet that goes all the way back to 1934 of all the previous judges, and I know she's younger than that. So she should be on this list, and she's
not. No, she did some kind of action through the postmaster of her state.
Yeah.
And it, maybe it had something to do with when they were territories. I don't know where they dug this up. It's, you know, look, it's all well and good, but I just hope that somebody becomes the president so they can pardon all of us when they come after us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna open the queue up for people so that they can start getting in there. And if anybody has anything new you know, that is of national interest, please feel free to go in. And I know we have a lot of new members, so any questions, you know, now's the time to ask them. No question is too little or too big, you know, and that's how you learn. And I always learn from the questions. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and take Michigan Jan. You're unmuted.
Go ahead, JP.
How are you doing?
Yeah, well, it's not Jan, it's JP.
It's Jan. Jean-Pierre.
It's Jan with JP. I want to say something about Judge Anna. I'm not sure that, I mean, I see it like we divide our forces all the time. I mean, we are barely crossing the 5,000 mark, and then some people are doing slightly differently. I mean, we don't even have communication together to establish a protocol, and that I don't understand at all. So basically, John, if you could explain why, Judge, I understand you are against those liens, okay? But is there anything else that prevents us to be united?
Well, do you want me to answer that, Gerard, or do you?
First of all, she has very good research. We even quoted her for her research. That's not
correct.
The problem. The problem is her solution. And I just talked about creating a vacuum and letting something in. You know, she was the secretary to the Pope. The Vatican is in this thing. They like to ride the wave to the top so they can stay in power. They're talking about an international tribunal in Brussels. We don't want, there's no international tribunal that can enforce anything in America that's a violation of our sovereignty. So as long as you're talking about any international board coming over here to straighten out the criminality in our government, I don't want it. Because who is that? Are we going to be under the Pope, under the Vatican, under Putin, under who? We don't need it. Our forefathers gave us that methodology right here. We don't need to rewrite the Constitution. That's a dangerous one. Does anybody believe that we have the people today that can cobble together anything that would be better than what our forefathers did? Now, I'm not saying that it was a perfect document, but it was damn near as perfect as you could get. And if we can get it back, we can fix those things that they didn't fix back then. The central bank. Everybody now knows the Federal Reserve, the central bank, the money. We all know that. We lived it. We've seen it. That will get fixed, but we do not need to can the Constitution. We do not need an international body to straighten out. Look at the rest of the world. You know what the rest of the world has? They have a fat fractional reserve of the freedom that we get. I don't know if we still do, but we've always had the most freedom out of anybody. Look, we have our Second Amendment. We're able to arm ourselves. We're able to talk on this venue here. We're not as locked down as China and Russia. Russia's got pretty good because they learned capitalism and they've loosened up their laws. It's easier to go into business in Russia right now than in America. America is locked down with their Agenda 21 and their permits and all this stuff. We got very little bit left, just a little spark. We have to fan that flame, and we have to light brush fires in people's minds in order to make the forest fire. And the trouble with Anna is her stuff's that's an old trick. And I mean, I'm not saying she's evil, but the thing is, you know, you have something that's sweet when you eat it, and then it's bitter when it hits the stomach. Because the end result, I believe, I've looked at it. It's not good. It's also creating a situation like the first write papers, and they put seal on it and stuff like that. And the first thing they did, they said, we're going to get you for imitating a court. Well, what do you think they're going to get them for? They're calling themselves Superior Court judges. They got new governors for every state. They got a new president. That's subversion. You can't just put a government on top of the government. You think that this government's going to let you get away with that? Look, they claim to have an oath of office. They claim to be under the Constitution. As long as they claim those things, we can change it. When they come out and they say, we're not under that Constitution, okay, now the militia and the Second Amendment comes out. But they're not saying that yet. You know why? Because they're not up for it. They're not sure they can survive it. They're very close, and this latest thing that we're going through, if we don't prevail, that's where they're going to lock us down. I'm telling you that this case, this whole Hammond-Bundy thing, is the line in the sand for them. This is the one where they want to crush the back of the Constitution. They want to crush the back of the patriots. They want to crush our sovereignty. They want to crush all our freedom under the name of peace and security. And they'll do anything. They're funding terrorists, for goodness sakes. And so, yeah, we could get together with them, but not by putting our fundamental principles aside. We're never going to do something where we don't have a trial by jury. How can you take somebody and arrest them and put them in jail because they disobeyed a grand jury, and you don't even know all the idiosyncrasies of the case? Look, in order to prove a crime, you have to prove intent. How do you know when that paper went into that court that actual person actually got the paper? Yeah, you got proof of service. You got evil people over there signing things. Maybe it went in the trash can. You're going to go after some guy that didn't even know it was coming in there. Look, you need to flush out the facts, and the grand jury does not do that. The grand jury looks to see if there's enough evidence for a trial. They've completely skipped the trial. You know what it is? They're like a little kid that can't wait for the dessert. And they're going right for the dessert, and they're not eating the main course or anything else. And you know what happens when you only eat dessert? You become nutritionally deficient. They are nutritionally deficient is the nicest way I can say it. And pretty soon, the legs get weak, and the eyes get fuzzy, and all that stuff happens, and you can't accomplish what you set out to do in the first place because they're deficient. Now, I could eat a certain amount of high fructose corn syrup and get away with it, but, you know, you can't, you know, you start cheating and cheating and cheating, and pretty soon you got something that breaks the camel's back, and we're trying to be pure. You know what I mean? We're trying to be fundamentally correct, and it's the safest path. There's compromise, but not on the lines that I'm talking about. You know,
no,
we
I understand
can't.
That.
Well, I'd like to pipe in too. Before you go, JP, I'd like to pipe in. And first of all, I would like to say, as long as I hear that canary in the background, I feel safe. Okay, but in any event, keep them tweeting. But in any event, this simple.
I'm worried about noxious gas.
It's this simple, and this is the question we have to ask ourselves. And you walk in life, you should ask this little question. Can light walk with darkness? You know, are you full of light, or do you have darkness in you? You either have one or the other. Matter of fact, God says if you don't have the light, you're full of darkness, period. You can't have a little bit of light. You either have light or you have darkness. And the point is that they break the principles. They violate the principles of common law. That means that they're not really walking in the light. Now, a lot of these people are being led astray. That's why I called some of these people Pied Pipers, because they're leading people who don't understand what they're getting into. And I want to tell you something, and it's already happened to people that have broken away from us out there in Colorado and other places. They went to jail. We told them to stop doing it. We cut ourselves off. We put on disclaimers. We distanced ourselves as far as we could. We told the people out in those states, stay away from them because you're only going to go to jail. And they did. They went to jail. That's where they're heading to. It's subversion against the United States of America. It doesn't matter at this point that corporatism has taken over and blanketed over the trust and that the enemy is in charge. Nevertheless, it's still subversion. There's another way to do it, okay? And now the thing is this. Here's another thing you have to think about. And they're not principled. They're not following principles. They're bypassing principles, number one. And the other thing is what they're doing is indictable. If they go and lean a judge and try to damage a judge or any elected individual, you must realize that if they came to us If that judge came to us and asked for a remedy, we have to give it to him. He has to get his day in court. They have injured him. So that tells us we can't do wrongdoings. They're doing wrongdoings. Now, again, the thinking is a little twisted and they're missing pieces. I understand how some of these people got to a certain point, but there's pieces in history they didn't get. Pieces of the way things work they didn't get. Pieces in common law they didn't get. And which would have negated their process. You know, look at when the first free men, the first 25 free men of the Magna Carta in 1215 took that judge, that king on the side of the road and put an axe to his head and said, sign or we take your head. That was a wrongdoing. They repented of that later, you know. They changed that. They would never do that again, they said. You see, there was a wrongdoing. They bypassed something. And that's the lesson to be learned. And unfortunately, people are looking at the first part of what took place with the Magna Carta, says we've got to take these people on the side of the road and put an axe to their head. No, that's not the way civilized people do it. It's not the way godly people do it. So we can't follow that road. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people. I presume it's a lot of people. It may not be a lot of people. I don't know. I was on their call. And I didn't get the impression that there was a lot of people, but there might have been. I just don't know. You know, whatever people are following them, I listen to some of those people, and I see that they're just following these people. They're not checking them out. They're not making sure what they're doing is right. And these are people that are walking wounded, just like most of our membership. We're walking wounded. We've been injured so much by the government in so many different ways. We've been violated in the courts. And we've been violated in our own streets and in our own homes, and we're upset and we're angry, and then now they've given something and they've come to the last straw, and they haven't been introduced to what we're doing. Maybe if they were introduced to what we're doing, maybe they'd see another way. Maybe the light would go on. But right now, they're being sucked into something that's going to get them in trouble, and they have no idea what they're doing, and it's a shame. So we should pray for these people. God tells us to pray for the enemy, pray for those who do things different, you know, who despise us, because they don't like us. That's true. I know that personally, and I'm not going to share those experiences. But nevertheless, we should pray for them. And if anybody knows anybody connected to them, introduce them to National Liberty Alliance. Tell them there's another way. Why don't you take a look at this way and see what's... and they've got to make their own mind up. But it's a shame. I don't know. Maybe we've spent a lot of time with this. JP, you want to finalize anything on this?
So there was a discussion between Anna and DNLA at one point, correct?
No, not directly. There's been messages sent to me from her. She sent me a book, and there's been they've sent other people on her behalf to me and talked to me. As a matter of fact, I'll share this one thing with you. I'm not going to mention names. They demanded that I step down from National Liberty Alliance and hand leadership over to someone else. That means they haven't got a clue on what we're doing. This has nothing to do with me. It has nothing to do with leadership. It has nothing to do with ego. This has to do with the people getting power at the grassroots level in their own county. And we have to teach them how to take that power, how to use that power, and execute it. And once they can do that, then we, the people, will be back in charge. And it's not one person. It's all of us. We, the people. But that's, they're thinking, they don't understand what we're doing. They just don't understand. So, you know, that's just one of the things. But we've had plenty
Didn't
of different conversations with different people.
Huh? Didn't she accuse you of being a bar attorney?
Yeah, that's out there, too, that I'm a bar attorney. I mean, I'm an eighth grade graduate, so I don't think they accept them. But in any event,
thank you, John. You answered the question faithfully, and that's what counts. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
right. It's good not to get too much of this because, look, we don't want to make enemies. We don't want to be out there saying bad things about somebody. But when it comes up, we have to tell the truth, and that's what we did tonight, just told the truth from our perspective. And you know, look, at the bottom line is let's hope for the best for them. Maybe they'll shore up their ways and change their thinking and do things different, more lawfully, more principled. And let's pray for them.
And look, we put the right foot forward, on more than one occasion. And when I was out to Oregon and I saw the committee of safety, and this is the last word I'm going to say on this, we offered to go through our book and to look at what Joaquin was doing. And we said, let's talk. And he said, I will not talk. You are the devil. He would not open his book to show us what he was doing, like we were going to steal his stuff. And so what else are you supposed to do? Tanner and I said, look, let's talk about the different things here. Because we particularly wanted to educate that committee of safety because they are in danger because they're signing these papers and they're going to be responsible. And this is nothing that should be – it was done in public in front of 30 people. So it's not a secret. And for him to say, you're the devil, you're a liar, you're this, you're that, but yet he didn't answer any of the questions I had. He refused to open up his paperwork. We had six – John gave me – I went out with six books, and the other guy went for $275 and opened up the print store on a Sunday and printed six more books so everybody can have one. And he completely shut that down, and nobody looked at those books because he intimidated them not to do it because they already, Susie Hammond had already made up her mind, and these people went to school with her. And so it was all done on emotion. It was not done on intellect. What are we going to do? She wants him. Well, I don't care. If the baby wants to play with a razor blade, do you let him play with the razor blade? That's how I feel about it. But, you know, there was nothing else we could say or nothing else we could do. I had to shake the dust from my sandals, and I just hope that they're gonna realize what's going on, and they will because they're not stupid people. They're very smart, and they're very godly, and so I know that they're going to be protected. I know that the light is going to shine, and they're going to see it. So all we got to do is keep doing what we're doing and be, like John says, it's the tortoise and the hare. We got to keep plodding along, and we're getting there. And we got some very encouraging things going on behind the scenes. You know, it's always what are you doing? What are you doing? What's going on? It's going on, and it's going to happen, and we have to have patience. And every day, it's like cutting with a machete through a jungle. You know, and every day you make a little bit more of a path, a little bit more, and pretty soon you get to the clearing, and that's where we're just about ready to break into that clearing. So just have faith and patience, and the patience part is hard, but if everybody does their part, we're going to get there because this is a people thing. That's one of the things that I think maybe even Clive and Bundy doesn't understand is that you have to have the people with this, including the sheriffs. This is a people movement. And the people have to stand together. If the people don't stand together, we're done. And we don't need a superior force. We just need a big enough force. Again, scriptures come into place. If my people who call themselves by my name would turn their face towards me, that's all we have to do is have enough people turn their face towards him and he would save us. And it's not a majority of people. It's just a critical mass of a remnant. You see, we don't even have the critical mass of the remnant yet, but we're very close. I can tell you we're very close. Anyway, that will end that. So, yep.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Anyway, anybody that's new, I'm sorry you put you through that, but it's probably good that you heard all this because, we end up repeating ourselves because we have new members coming in all the time and questions do come up. So even older members, when you get a hold of new members, you know, try to answer their questions. Unless, you know, if it's something that you can't answer, then you got to shoot it to one of the upper guys. You know what I mean? And there's plenty of those people that have been here a while that can answer these questions and do a good job of it. But you know, we're always going to have new members, and these questions will always surface because people don't know. People hear things and they want to know, and we have to answer them. And it's very good that we're answering them in public, I think. It's a little sticky sometimes, and you don't want to go too far, and it doesn't feel good, but you know what? It's the medicine that we need to take. Okay, we got George. It looks like Eric. I'm going to unmute you, and thank you, JP and Jam. Okay, Georgia, you've been unmuted.
Yes, Georgia, Eric, are you there? Can I
yes.
hear you? I mean, can you hear
yes.
me?
Okay. Yes, yes.
Okay, so just a few things I wanted to touch on. The Christian thing, I think I've got some footnotes here. came up last week, and someone was mentioning again, trying to say that, you know, our founding fathers weren't Christian, this and that, and this seems to come up a lot. But I did find some stuff that I think will be pretty good to relay. And I know John knows it because the footnotes I have for this little conversation come from the book Excellence of the Common Law. But just real quick, before that, I think John was saying something last week about driver's licenses. And I imagine, and I'm just guessing here, that y'all have been having discussions about not needing a license when you drive, and then someone will bring up the point, hey, well, if we don't have licenses, then we might have people on the streets that don't know what they're doing and they're going to drive crazy like. But I have a, I think that kind of, I don't, and again, I'm just guessing here. I'm just guessing at what y'all were talking about. But I am against having licenses. And here's a little footnote from a Carl Miller thing. Young Christian attorney Patrick Henry saw why a jury of peers is so vital to freedom. It was March 1775. He rode into small town Culpeper, Virginia, and some people were whipping this guy almost to death. You could see his ribs, it says. Henry said, when they stopped beating him, I could see the bones of his rib cage. I turned to someone and asked what the man had done to deserve such a beating as this. The reply given him was that he didn't take a license. A license often becomes an arbitrary control by government that makes a crime out of what ordinarily would not be a crime. It turns a right into a privilege. Now, as far as having people that do have licenses on the street, well, look, I just want to tell you something, that if you come to my neighborhood here in Atlanta, Georgia, and every report I've ever read says that talking on your cell phone, just talking alone, not even texting, but talking alone, is at least as, if not more, dangerous than drunk driving. And let me tell you something. You come down here to my neighborhood during rush hour, and 5 out of every 10 people are on their phone. And they all have licenses, but what they don't have is respect. And the common law, if we enforce the common law, they'll get that respect soon enough, because the common law has been described as rough and ready for hundreds and hundreds of years. So I just want to make that point about licenses, that it's specious reasoning to say we should all have licenses, because I'm telling you something, people have licenses that are driving right now, and a lot of these people are incorrigible. They will not stop talking on their cell phones. So anyway, I just wanted to make that point. Before I get to the Christian thing, did you have anything that you wanted to reply to what I just said?
Yeah, I'd like to just make a point, if I could, and I've mentioned this many, many times. You know, we have to ask ourselves, and as a matter of fact, Bill Thornton really kind of gave me this point because he spoke about this. You have to decide where you're going to draw the line and where you're going to do your battle. You know, some people don't mind going to jail over and over and over again and maybe have some successes, at least in certain counties or certain states or certain areas. But and if that's what you want to do, that's fine. I agree. You do not need a license to drive. No one should have to be forced to have one. Right now, the way that things are, you're going to spend a lot of time in jail. Every time they stop you, you're going to find yourself arrested, and you got to go through all of the expenses and the time and the traveling to defend yourself. And all. And if you want to do that, that's good too. That's fine. I think you're going to, again, whatever people want to do. I have chosen to get a license because I thought I had to have one. Now that I have one, my perspective is, well, in case I want to do some commercial driving, and a few years back I did do a little commercial driving, I may want to do it again, then I've got the license. I can drive a commercial vehicle and I don't have to worry about it, because that's what the license ultimately is for commercial work. But if I'm stopped in the street and a police officer asks to see my driver's license, I'm not going to tell him, well, I'm not driving a commercial vehicle, or I'm driving an automobile or whatever it is. I'm not going to make that argument. It's not even worth it. I'm going to show him my license. You know, and, you know, half the time I get stopped for things where I probably should have gotten tickets. I've been gotten away with because I'm extremely polite to these guys. And in my wallet also, maybe a couple of cops have seen this. One cop had seen it one time, and I was traveling quite quick. He saw that I was a vet, and he asked me, and I said, yeah. And he then just gave me a warning and said, don't go so fast. And that was it. You know, so, I mean, that kind of helped too. But the thing is that being polite and having a license will keep you out of jail. Don't make an argument with the cop. He hasn't got a clue. And I'll tell you what, it's not even worth making an argument in the town court. You go in there, you make your position, you make it once, and you leave it alone. If you don't like what's going on, sue them in a federal court. But you have to be prepared and be ready to sue them in a federal court. You have to know how to do that. You have to know what to sue for. He's violating your unalienable rights. And that you got to make that position clear. And if the federal court will try to throw your paperwork out. But it, depending on how you go in and the judge says, you know, you could win in there.
Yeah, I should have prefaced that by saying that this for that discussion, that argument that I just made, that's for after we get our courts back.
Oh, absolutely.
And then we just... Yeah, now I drive with a license and I have no interest in going to their sandbox. I have no interest in going to jail. So I drive with a license. I'm very polite too. But yeah, my argument is for after we get the courts back, what then will we decide as a people? And I just wanted you to know that just having a license doesn't mean you're going to care about your neighbor, because I have a lot of my neighbors that don't care.
Right.
Absolutely.
See what I'm saying? Because they're, you know, they talk on their cell phones when they're driving. And again, that's at least, as every study I've ever seen, it's at least as, if not more dangerous than driving while drinking.
Yeah.
And the other issue you brought up with our founding fathers and Christianity, and we all hear the same thing. Look, at anybody who took the civics course, you saw the documentary that Mr. Griffin put out there concerning the back in the days in the 20s and 30s, they were trying to change history and they wouldn't get too much success. So they created their own group of historians, and they flooded. They got special memberships with prestigious places and did different things, and then they just started to change history. But if anybody wants to learn the truth, and we do have these mentioned on the site. I was just looking to see where. I don't recall where. But there is a list of books that I give some, you know, I suggest that people should read. You know, one of them, of course, is The Excellence of the Common Law by Brent Winters. But the other books, and you can buy all this from the constitutional place that we get our constitutional booklets from, is you can get the real Thomas Jefferson. I am blown away by this book. All of the BS that's out there, and when you read this book, this is him in his own words, and in the words of people that knew him, the relationship, the kind of man he was, the conversations, the letters of exchange, the work that he'd done in Virginia Congress and also in up in the U.S. as the president, and the work he'd done, of course, with the Declaration, his influence on the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and it's just this. Tells you who this man is, and this book will tell you he was a godly man. Now, there's also other books that I had gotten, and I haven't read this yet, so I haven't even put these books up on the line yet, but there are a few other books I got up there. But one is The Real George Washington and The Real Benjamin Franklin. And so, again, these books can all be gotten from the National Center for Constitutional Studies. I think that's nccs.org, maybe? Might be their site,
right.
.com, and you can get all these books there. They're extremely cheap. They're not expensive at all. And you could buy a special package and buy all four books at the same time. Was it four or three? Let's see. Washington, Jefferson, Franklin. I think that was the three, yeah. So
yeah, I got my pocket right here. It's nccs.net, yeah.
.net, okay. So anyway, these are great books. And anybody doing what we're doing, you should be reading those books. These are the books that you get real knowledge of common law and who our founding fathers are and how this country was put together and by who they were.
And to add to that, I just wanted to in case there was, you know, if this discussion keeps coming up, just to maybe color it in a little bit for some people that might not understand that I think you could, based upon all the quotes that come from our founding fathers, you could make an argument that some of them, now some of the quotes, well, specifically some of the quotes, you can see that they're not talking about not believing in God. What they're talking about is not believing in the clergy. And I think some of them are even known as anti-clerical Christians. That's what they called
them. That was Jefferson. Founding. Jefferson hated the priesthood. He hated the clergy. There were scoundrels. And, of course, there were good ones, too. Don't get me wrong. And I know he knew that, too. But generally speaking, Look, if you want to find the devil, I learned this early on by the mercy of God. You want to find the devil, go to church. That's where you find him. Okay? Go to church. You'll find the devil. Because that's where he's going to be. That's where he's going to be. And by God's mercy, I learned that early in my Christian walk, and it kept me safe and on the right path.
All right, well, look, just one more. Here is one quote from Jefferson. The Christian religion, when divested of the rags in which they, the priests, have enveloped it, and brought to the original purity and simplicity of its benevolent institutor, is a religion of all others most friendly to liberty, science, and the freest expansion of the human mind. Now, to maybe clear up a little bit how the enemy has poisoned us and taken away some of our some of the things that would be more obvious if they hadn't colored in our history. I found this in Excellence of the Common Law. And it's a little interesting tidbit. I just found this the other day, and I thought it was really important. He's talking about in the section called Common Law versus Republican Forms. He says, consequently, the use of the phrase English Common Law would have raised And first sentence, you wouldn't know what the consequently is. But anyway, he says, the use of the phrase English common law would have raised indignation among Americans, causing misplaced resentment against common law, whose ideals the colonists were fighting to preserve. So the colonists are fighting to preserve common law. And so in a matter of like political correctness, they decided not to call it the English common law, even though when we see in American jurisprudence, it refers to common law. But anyway, the next part of this, he says, a few decades later in the early 19th century America, resentment against all things English, especially the common law, fostered an emotionally charged political faction, placing the future of the common law tradition in peril. Because of this danger, the word republic became politically preferred. Now, he's talking about how, you know, it's not necessarily the Greek notion of republic that we have here in America. Ours is entirely founded upon Christian principle. And the, you know, the American jurisprudence, what's that little reference? As to the construction, with reference to the common law, an important canon of construction is that constitutions must be construed to reference the common law. Now, I know you already have this in some of your papers, but in interpreting the federal constitution, recourse may still be had to the aid of the common law of England. It has been said that without reference to the common law, the language of the federal constitution could not be understood. And that's an excellent point. And then the last point I just want to make is that you have mentioned this a few times before, and I finally found it in the book, that our Anglo-Saxon forefathers, they at first, they had the Volkerrecht, but what they didn't have was anything to support it. And that, you know, they were, they had a pagan religion.
That's correct.
But then they found the Bible, and this fellow, came and made a presentation to them, Paulinus, I believe, the Christian missionary Paulinus. And then this is what, the Angle King Edwin's advisor said to him. He said, Your Majesty, when we compare the present life of a man with that time of which we have no knowledge, it seems to me like the swift flight of a lone sparrow through the banqueting hall where you sit in the winter months to dine with your thanes and counselors. Inside, there is a comforting fire to warm the room. Outside, the wintry storms of snow and rain are raging. This sparrow flies swiftly in through one door of the hall and out through another. While he is inside, he is safe from the winter storms, but after a few moments of comfort, he vanishes from sight into the darkness from whence he came. Similarly, man appears on earth for a little while, but we know nothing of what went before this life and what follows. Therefore, if this new teaching of Scripture can reveal any more certain knowledge, it seems only right that we should follow it. And then, just as one last little bit, this fellow named Cuffy, the pagan high priest, again confessed the emptiness of the Anglo-Saxon religion and its personal spiritual disappointment. And he says, I have long realized that there is nothing in what we worship, for the more diligently I sought after truth in our religion, the less I found. Now I publicly confess that this teaching clearly reveals truths that will afford us the blessings of life, salvation, and eternal happiness. Therefore, Your Majesty, I submit that the temples and altars that we have dedicated to no advantage be immediately desecrated and burned. So if someone wants to make the point that we're not a Christian nation, well, you can argue that some of the founders were anti-clerical. You can say that, you know, there's another word, I forget what it is, but it's similar to anti-clerical, like theistic rationalism. I think that's it. But the point of the matter is that we are a country based upon Christian principle. And this goes back to the Angles and the Saxons and the Volkrieg, and that's where this all came from. So, you know, if I could put this argument to rest, and I doubt that I can, but the thing is the point is, it is Christian principle, whether the founding fathers were Christian or not. I believe most of them were. But the thing is they studied every form of government under the sun. They studied every man's work who studied every form of government under the sun, and they knew above all else the only way to be free was to have God as your lawmaker and your lawgiver. Otherwise, you can forget about it.
Well, amen. You know, it was Jefferson who was the founder of the government that we have. It was Jefferson who did the exploration and research and was highly educated in all these areas. He spoke so many languages. There was one man who spoke with him, and he said he started to speak about medical things, and he thought he was a doctor. He started talking about legal things, and he thought he was a lawyer. And it went on and on to numerous things. He thought he was a scientist. He thought he was this, and he thought he was that. And this was the conversation he was having with this man, and he wanted to know who he was, and he was there to meet Thomas Jefferson. He didn't know it was him. And the man said, well, that's Thomas Jefferson. And that was the man he came to meet. And that's how brilliant this man is. He was, no doubt, he was equal to, ultimately, to any other intellect in any other field. But the thing is that he is the one that brought it to the founding fathers. They all were already in Christianity, and they were already in common law. But the history and everything and the finding of reconstructing a new government came from Jefferson, and he sold it to all of them. And he was a very quiet-spoken individual. He had some kind of a problem with his vocal cords, so he couldn't speak very loud, so he was never a great speaker, although he had spoken numerous times, but most people could never hear him. And so that was one of the things that he lacked, but that was nothing he could do about it. But he did some great research, and he developed and brought together what we have is probably the best form of government man can have, if only we could get rid of these tyrants. And I think we have a solution for that now.
Yeah, I agree. You do, and great that you back away from anything international. We're the people, the only ones that are going to save us. Real quick, while I have you here, the seven pillars of wisdom. Where does that come from exactly? That Jefferson studied.
Well, the seven principles of wisdom comes from Second Peter 1, verses 5 through 11, and they're virtue, knowledge, temperance, patience, godliness, brotherly kindness, and charity. Those are the seven pillars of wisdom.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. I yield. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you a lot.
Thank you.
Okay. Next caller. No name. It ends in 5623. You've been unmuted. You can give me your name and your state.
This is Barrett from North Carolina.
Hey, Derek. How's it going?
No, Barrett.
Oh, Barrett. Sorry.
I just came up with a theory about how to get constitutional sheriffs in office.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
What I was thinking about doing was getting several people to correct their political status to state citizen nationals and do a write-in for constitutional sheriff.
Yeah, but that doesn't really change anything per se, just because they're nationalists, and they have some kind of a different kind of a standing or something. Look at all of us are in equal standing here in America in every state, and again, the fiction couldn't claim what it wants to claim, that we're something else because we're citizens or we hold licenses or social security numbers or any of those things. But it's all fraud, so it's irrelevant. It doesn't mean anything.
If you want to get
constitutional sheriffs, I think the people look at. I think you could sit down and really study what's going on. Any individual can really sit down and figure out what's going on and how the sheriff can fix it, and what the sheriff should really be thinking and believing in, and what his job is, and talking about the fact that he's here to protect you, the people. He's not here to protect the judge. He's not here to protect any elected individual. He's here to protect the people, not only from bad people, but also bad people in government, and even bad cops. And I think anybody that's running for sheriff, I think we have some people considering running for sheriff. I'm going to try to create a little platform that I can suggest to them to run on, and I think they would be elected if they really get out or able to pipe out their message to the people. After all, it's only a county election, so, you know, that sheriff should be able to get to everyone in that county, in most cases anyway.
But he makes a good point, John. Look at write-ins are one of the hardest things to win.
Yeah, but he was talking about correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he was talking about someone that has a special status. Was that where am I correct?
A United States citizen can vote in a local election.
Sure we can. I'm a United States citizen, and I'm a New York citizen. I'm a citizen of every state. That's why I'm a United States citizen. And again, the Constitution provides for people becoming citizens. We found that out. We just read it. Section 8, Article 1, Section 8. The Congress shall have the power to establish a uniform rule of naturalization. So when people come in, they swear them in as citizens of the United States, and then they go to choose whatever state they want to live in, and that's where they're going to abide and be a citizen of. But as they travel through other states, they have all the rights of every other citizen. So, you know, we are a nation, but we are also different states, different countries, and 50 of them.
Well, I wasn't born in the United States.
Yeah, look at
you. Wasn't born where?
I wasn't born in the United States.
So you're a national then?
No, he's trying to... Where were you born?
I was born in Florida.
So you were born in the United States then?
No, sir.
United States. But I know. Look, this is some of the poison that's out there on some of these websites that's hurting people. When you go into court and you try to make this argument, you look like a Fruit Loop after a while, because they can make you look crazy to the common person because they don't understand what you're talking about. I understand what you're talking about. And you are absolutely right in what you're saying from their perspective. But from our perspective, is everything they're doing is fraud. They have robbed our process of naturalizing people.
Okay?
And therefore, we're not going to pay no heed to it. We're not going to give them an authority of having that prerogative. We're going to take it away from them and say, no, that's fraud. Forget about it. We're not going to talk about it. And they won't talk about it either, by the way. And Bill Thornton makes that point very clear. He says, why argue these points? He says, because they're never going to bring them up in court. And just because you may make these claims, you think that it's going to be some kind of magic wand. All of a sudden, you open up a standing in the court, and they're going to listen to you and give you what you want. Well, I have a bridge in Brooklyn, if you believe that. And all the people that are selling this stuff, they're going to jail usually. And you know, they may not be talking about it, and they're not having the successes that they're claiming, okay? They're just not having it. Now, there have been some successes in the past, but that was 20, 30 years ago. You know, the constitutional man had some successes. He's not going to have those successes today in court if he went into court. He's not going to get them.
Well, because they've trained them away from that. They've trained them how to deal with those citizens. But you know what? There was a Supreme Court ruling recently that addressed this, and they said, if Washington, D.C. thinks that they can make you a citizen by virtue of signing something, they said that is not the rules of residency. They said you either got to be making money there or laying your head down at night there. So their presumption that you're a U.S. citizen because you have a social security number or a driver's license, the judge said that doesn't hold true because that doesn't establish residency. What you do for business or what contract you sign with somebody doesn't make you a resident of the District of Columbia. And this is one of their judges. So look, the light is starting to come in. You know, they're starting to They're starting to see this.
You just mentioned how they train the judges.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think they knew, but the more we've been in court and listening to them, and I know people.
Oh, they know.
They know. They have to know.
The judges and the clerks get a copy of a book. The book is called the Anti-Government Movement Guidebook. It's for the judges and clerks. How to subvert the law to beat us in court.
Yes, yes. And you know what? I know somebody that got out of the Trooper Academy recently, the State Trooper Academy, and they tell these guys.
What was the name of that book again?
It's the Anti-Government Movement Guidebook. It's put in, National Justice Institute.
Yeah, that's the ones that are always teaching them all that stuff.
National Justice Institute.
But they tell these young men that are going through the police academies, they said, when you approach the car, you're contracting with the people. So they've gotten to the point that they're telling their officers to ask certain questions that you give away your right, you contract with them. See, they're actually training them because they understand that they don't have jurisdiction or authority. The people are starting to figure it out. So it makes them feel better if they can ask you questions and you can answer those questions, and then they can say, well, now I can hold them to this particular thing or that particular thing because he answered this in this way, and so he's contracted with me. I mean, you see how convoluted and sick it is? And these officers, they don't really get the big picture, you know what I mean? So we're contracting, we have to say this and we have to say that because that makes the ticket stick. You know, it's going to be years before they finally put it together to realize that they're subverting the Constitution when they do that. You know?
Yeah, I'm trying to educate my sheriff here on that now.
Right, right.
I took him our civics course.
Yeah, well, the civics course is good. But you know what? For a sheriff, get him to take the constitutional course first because it's the fast track to opening his eyes. I mean, the civic course is really good.
At least he's willing to talk to me.
Well, that's the first step. And, you know, it's always better to put a name and a face to you. It's harder for them to abuse you when they know you live down the street and building such and such. It makes it more personal. You know what I mean? I mean, the trouble is today is we're not the country we used to be. Nobody talks to anybody, you know, and they do these things to you, and it's like they don't even know you. Look, these are our neighbors. And the nice thing about the sheriff is he's elected, and so he has to care about his constituents. You know, you don't get that with a state trooper necessarily, you know what I mean? I mean, you might get it with a town cop. You know, I was raised believing in local law enforcement, and the reason they were pushing local law enforcement back then is they realized that at least with the local law enforcement, they had control of the purse strings through their votes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so the people that were patriots years ago and different people like the John Birch Society who were kind of, you know, woo-wooed and then subverted, they were all for that because they understood what was going on, you know?
Yeah, you understand that every court case on the docket's money for the judge, right?
Oh yeah, every time he bangs his gavel, and I mean, I don't know. Now, how can they not know that? I mean, think about it. That right there is such a conflict of interest. Anybody that has any inkling of right and wrong, how do you sleep at night? You know, we had a judge that retired recently up here I think he was in the Northeast. And he bragged that he had handed out over 1 million years in sentences. I mean, what do you think we ought to do with that guy?
Well, like I said, every name on that court dock, it's money for the judge. He's administering that SQK trust, and he gets $2,500 for every name on the docket.
Yeah, how do we let them get away with that? You know, another thing they do is they give these classes locally anyway. For the state magistrates, they got a state magistrates association, and they teach the judges, you know. And I got another friend of mine here, and we talked about we should go down and try to get in that course. I bet you they don't want to let you in, but you know what? If it's sanctioned by the state, they're not allowed to have secret courses. So we should go sit there and see what they're teaching these judges. And they should let us in for free. I don't think they pay. You know?
Oh, I'd really like to go.
If I had time, I wish I had time to do all the stuff.
Well, maybe the research committee should look into that and discover, you know, someplace where these courses are going on in each state.
I'll tell you one thing we should do when we get into the courts and we have our four administrators per county, that's one of the things they need to do. Somebody needs to go on a regular basis and sit down to the State Magistrates Association classes to hear what they're telling the judges. We may have to actually go in there and fix their curriculum. I'm sure we will, because I'm sure, you know, they're telling them all kinds of stuff. Look at every judge, right down to the town judge, when you go into these courts, if you don't plea and you don't understand the charges, they won't move forward. They go crazy. They want to throw you in jail. They go crazy. But they've told them something that they got to get you to understand the charges. I mean, do you stand under my authority, right? And to plea innocent or guilty, which means that you're recognizing that they have that authority over you. And these judges, I'll tell you what, you want to make them turn red and explode, just say, we used to tell them, say, I don't understand. But then what they do is they send you for a mental evaluation. So now, you know, we've gotten to the point you could just go in and say, I don't understand, and I also don't stand under your authority, if that's what you mean. When you say, do I understand, do you mean that I stand under your authority? No, I don't stand under your authority. I understand what you're trying to do here, but I don't stand under your authority. I think you can get that bold. But again, if you're in court talking like that to a judge, you're asking for trouble. You know what I mean? You got to pick your battles, but, you know, that's just the way it is. So anyway, I think we understand each other. I think we've kind of.
Oh yeah, well, see, I've been studying under Rod Plash for about the last 5 years now, and he's got the codes and stats down good. He's hitting them on the public side, and I want to bring the private side back that is yours.
Well, that's what we're doing essentially. We are bringing the Constitution, and that is the de jure. They're corporate.
That is correct.
You know, and the trouble with their corporate side is, look, you can learn their statutes, and you can beat them at their statutes, but you'll never do it again. Because the minute that you figure out how to get them in a horn dilemma with their statute, guess what? You come back in a year, that statute's not going to be there. They're going to change it.
Right. Well, I was looking in the Constitution, the federal Constitution. One of my first questions was to my sheriff was, I said, you show me in the state or federal Constitution where the state was granted the authority to legislate to the people.
They're not.
You also, there's no place in the Constitution where they've been given any authority to call bring together the juries. They don't have the authority to do that. They can call for the juries, but they can't bring them together. That has to be done by the people. There's no way getting around it. As a matter of fact, history shows only three ways that the grand jury can be impaneled. One is through the sheriff, another is through a coroner, and the third, and most importantly, is through the people themselves. The very first grand jury was called by the people themselves. You know, you could make the argument that the Declaration of Independence was the first American grand jury, ultimately. That argument could be made. It was made up of, what, I think 56 men who signed that document.
Right.
But nowhere will you find in history where the judge or the king calls the jury. They never call the jury. They could call for the jury, possibly, but, you know, they don't impanel them. And nowhere in the Constitution, because it is an unalienable right, and United States versus Williams, that's mentioned and brought up, and it was brought up in many other cases, the right of the people. But nowhere, you know, and that the grand jury comes from the people. They can't do nothing for or against it. It is an unalienable right that they can't touch. So how they think it is that all of a sudden they write this code, they codify the juries and they take control, they rob them. And, they fought to get rid of them, and they couldn't. I mean, they fought so hard here in New York. I think it was in 1938 or 1949. There was a big movement to do away with the jury system and so on and so forth. And they pulled together a constitutional convention here in New York, and it worked against them. As a matter of fact, they came up and out of that convention saying that the grand jury will never be done away with here in New York. It is an unalienable right. So look at, so they couldn't be, get rid of it that way. So little by little, these snakes come in and they start to take control and puppetize them. And yeah. And we have to expose this. They can't. How can the state control everything? Judge, jury, and the prosecutor, and even the executioner. How can they control it all? You can't win in a court when they control all of those things. You can't win.
Because they control the schools and they teach us to be good little slaves. That's how they do it. Because nobody knows any better. Now, New York, as bad as it is in the Northeast, they were closer to the common law than the Western states. Look at Washington State killed the grand jury. Only the judge can call them together. I don't even think they use them. And there's a and in California, they I don't know if it was a, I think it's the whole state now. I don't know if it was a particular county. But they said no more grand jury in cop killings where a cop shoots somebody because they did it on emotions because the grand jury refused to indict the police officer. And I don't know if he should have been indicted or he shouldn't have been indicted, but they looked at some evidence and somebody convinced them that he did the right thing. But they got the people all stirred up and they said, oh, well, this grand jury, it's no good. You got to leave it to the prosecutor. Can you imagine leaving things to the prosecutor? The people have been hoodwinked to believing that the prosecutor is a better judge of whether or not a police officer should be indicted than the people in the street. I mean, that's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard of, but they pulled it off. They passed a law out there. So that's pretty disgusting. Anyway, that's very interesting, but I want to move on. We got a lot of people in the queue. Thank you very much for those questions.
All right.
Connecticut, Edward.
Hey, hi, J.L.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, good. I'm glad. Sometimes I have the mute on, so at least you can hear me.
Right.
Yeah, I'm glad you're back from Oregon.
Yeah, it was an experience, and we made some good contacts. I'm glad we went. The whole thing hasn't come to fruition, but it will. It didn't work out the way we thought it would, but it's working in different ways, which, you know, will end up being the total result. So thank you for that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, exactly. I know just where you're going with that. Yeah, I just want to, you know, I'm always trying to get more reasons for people to join NLA. You know, we have so many reasons already. I just want to just keep, you know, plugging away at it. Now, I was wondering, you know, along with things, you know, for example, you know, we have that there's no statute of limitations, you know, and there's no statutes, you know, all these things. And, of course, all the other things, you know, preventing the corruptions in the court, you know, to say a few. But one other thing I was thinking, how does the common law handle when, say, if somebody is trying to evade, you know, being sued, you know, for damages and so forth. Like, say somebody, to avoid that, they leave the state to avoid that situation. How does the common law handle that type of thing?
Well, when you're avoiding a suit, that's more of an equity thing. You know what I mean? That's like contract law, right? So that's different than constitution. I mean, it's still ruled under the Constitution, but, you know, if you go through a legal process when you're trying to sue somebody and they leave the state, one state is supposed to honor what the other state does. You can subpoena them and you can have them brought in. They could get a subpoena to court. And if they don't show up, well, they default, right?
I think the key thing is catching them
before they leave the state is probably the key point. And unless you can prove that they left the state for that purpose, that could be another key point. But basically, look at anything over $20 could bring them into a common law court by jury. But bear in mind, even though, you know, for the first time in history, you look up in any of these dictionaries and you will find that equity court is not listed under common law. But in America, it is. It is ruled by American jurisprudence, which are common law documents in order to guide the judges concerning the common law in the equity courts. And any judge acting outside of American jurisprudence is in bad behavior and can be removed from the bench. by the people, and that process is done through a grand jury indicting for violating people's unalienable rights. So, but as far as an individual, what's the circumstance?
Just general stuff that I see all the time. You know, just nothing in particular. Where say if somebody is have damaged someone, or even.
I've seen cases where you're in one state and you're selling something to somebody in another state. Matter of fact, I had handled a case like this once before, and where the individual constructed the materials necessary for the job and it was taken into another state. Now, they made the install, they had some problems, and it's arguable whether it was the installer's fault or the product's fault. And they tried to sue him in that state. But you see, in the contract was already the provision that if there are any concerns or any legal issues that come up, it would be dealt with in the court in the state where the product was created. And so, therefore, if the person wanted to sue them, they would have to travel to this state. Okay? And now they tried to sue it in the other state, and the judge tried to get the person out there. They never went out there, and I'm not sure how that all ended up. I did write some papers for this person. But way back when this was going on, he had failed to tell me that was in the contract, because I told him, I said, you should have put this. He said, it's already in the contract. I said, well, you have nothing to worry about then. Just write the judge and say, hey, he wants to make a charge, come up here and do it here.
Yeah, I think it went away, John. They gave up.
Yeah, they can't do nothing. They can't extradite him. They can't pull him into that state. He wants to sue him. He's got to come to New York to sue him because if he didn't like that, he didn't have to sign the contract, the agreement to buy the materials. So, but I believe the guy did kind of go over backwards for this guy to help him out anyway. But he just still wasn't satisfied on whatever it was, and I don't recall, a long time ago. So usually there are provisions. Now, if you have someone that is out and doing wrongdoing in a contract and then disappear to another state, now you got a fraud charge. Now you got a criminal charge. Now it's a whole different thing now. You see, if it's not fraud, that's one thing. If you missed them and you didn't get to them before you left the state. Now, once you sue him here and you file paperwork and he gets it, or he or she gets it, and then leaves the state, well, they'll default on it. You do a default paper, and I don't know how that would work. I'm sure that maybe from one state to another, you might be able to take it onto a federal issue for execution. In order to collect your winnings from a court case for default. I'm not sure. I'd have to look into that. It's an interesting question.
I think you just file the lien, and then you can collect the lien from anywhere. It doesn't matter where you're living. You just debt collector.
Yeah, and there's a Uniform Act anyway. It's even in the Constitution. What's it called? Let me see. I think it's Article 5 or 4.
Good faith and credit.
Yeah, that's it. Good faith and credit.
Yeah.
So you should be able to execute it from the good faith and credit to go into another state. They have to, acknowledge it. So that's the key. Yeah, Article 4, Section 1, full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public arts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state. Right there, judicial proceeding of the state. And the Congress may, by general laws, prescribe the manner in which such acts, records, and proceedings shall be approved and the effects thereof. So right there, it shows you that you can go into another state and make your collection. Now, here's the key thing, though. You see, when someone tried to sue someone from one state and another state, and they had already signed the contract agreeing that if there were any legal concerns, it would have to be done in New York State, that state lost the jurisdiction. No matter what they do, in those, that jurisdiction is invalid, so they couldn't get and the judge knew it, obviously, because apparently he didn't enforce it or make a ruling on it. The guy refused to go out there. Well, I'm going to go all the way out there. You come here, you know? And the judge tried everything to get him out there. He didn't go, so he couldn't make a ruling on the case, and he knew it because it wouldn't be able to stand. He'd be he'd be violating his jurisdiction. He didn't have jurisdiction over the case. It was New York. Now, if he would have went out there, he would have been giving the judge jurisdiction. You see?
Right.
So that's another problem. You don't go to that then.
Right. Isn't it amazing? Right there in the Constitution. It's all there.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, only inquiring because I just want to see accountability across the board. Just like we want accountability from our leaders. We have to be accountable to each other. It's just like myself. What if I inadvertently do something that causes a damage? Now, all I could do is just, you know, explain I'm sorry, you know, that I did it, and how could I make it up, and try to make the best deal for myself, and then abide by it. You know, so I'd have to be accountable to this. We all make mistakes. Different things could happen. And like I said, inadvertently, I could damage somebody, something, you know. It's an accident. That's what accidents are, happen. And so we should all be accountable. So anyway, just seeing how that would go.
Unfortunately, the powers that be, the judiciary powers, the prosecutors, they want to make everything a crime. You know, there's no such thing as a mistake. Look, there's nothing wrong with, you know, being with a situation where someone does a wrongdoing to another person and you make them pay restitution. It doesn't mean that that person's a criminal. It doesn't mean that they need to go to jail. In some cases, it may. That's up to the jury to decide on this. But generally speaking, they love to do these things and make everyone a criminal because that's one way that they can get gun control going. You see, so they try to make as many people criminals as possible. And even through just violations in with your motor vehicle, to some degree, they can turn some of this stuff to criminal things.
Exactly.
As soon as you are put in jail, you're a criminal, you got a record, you can't have a weapon.
Right. Where here are things, if someone did something wrong, that they could negotiate and say, you know, sorry, and take care of it in a civil way.
Right.
There's no reason it should be.
And that's not the prosecutor's job to fix. That is the grand jury's job to fix. And they should always see if they can't remedy the problem before sending it into court by giving an indictment. They should always try to remedy it outside the court. Why not? But clearly the prosecutor doesn't have the power or the authority. Where in the Constitution says that the prosecutor can make a deal and override the jury? If the jury decides to indict and they indict, how is it that the prosecutor thinks he can do away with that indictment and make a deal with the criminals? How is that possible? What world, what planet do they come from? Because you can't find it in the Constitution.
That's what the corporations love, because they plan on breaking the law. And they plan on making a deal, and they plan on getting slapped on the wrist because they make a $1 billion and they go, okay, you've got to pay us $2 million. And who are they paying it to? They're not paying it to the people that they frauded. They're paying it to the government. It's really sick. It's corporate welfare and everything else. And the other thing they don't want is, look at their statutes and their IBM card. It's like an IBM punch card. And when the holes line up, it's like, you know, don't pass go, don't collect $200, go straight to jail. They love that because there's money in that, and the lawyers can make money, and everybody makes money every step along the way, and it's very easy and it's clean, and we don't have to look at intent and all this other stuff that common law gets into. Oh, that's too messy. And not only that, if we had common law, you would see the trials drop exponentially because people would fix it before it ever got that far.
Right.
You know what I mean? And the lawyers would rail against that. Oh, my goodness, people fixing each other. That's horrible.
And a lot of violent crimes would disappear if we were totally under the common law, because no one would know who has a weapon or not. And most people would be have their own protection if they feel it necessary. You know, violence would disappear, you know. You know, you go down to New York City, the criminals have guns. They're counting on you not having a weapon. You know what I mean? So...
Yeah, and John, yeah, no, and you said that as far as the people fixing it themselves, it doesn't even have to be a court thing or a prosecutor thing or anything. Many things should be taken care of. Now, one last thing before I sign off, just an update.
And by the way, just to add to that, the way we're setting things up as the administrators, setting it up, we got that from the Magna Carta. That's where the administrators come in. Four people are sent out to fix the problem. And if they can't fix the problem, they bring it to the 25. And so that's where we got that from. And it makes all the sense in the world. We need to establish that process that we get right from history.
Exactly.
But go ahead.
It's the perfect solution. Yeah, one just quick thing, just an update, if you have anything on the Eric Gardner. I think you did mention somebody was.
Yeah, we did. We did an indictment here in New York. It didn't go anywhere. We should have done this in federal court, but we didn't know back then enough to do it there. It's going to be risen back up. We have... We have done, I think, 8 indictments on judges here in New York. They may think we disappeared, but I think they know we're still out there and we're still coming. At some point in time, we're going to take those into the federal courts at the right time and refile them in the federal courts. But obviously, we're not going to be able to do that until we get some leverage in the courts. And Oregon, I think, is going to provide for that leverage. And there's a lot of other things that are going on, negotiations, conversations, communications with individuals that can help us to get this this leverage in the court.
Actually, I understand that exactly. The more power we have, the bigger we get, then we're definitely
right. And people power is the biggest thing. Let me tell you something.
Exactly.
When they understand... And we've mentioned it in our paperwork, maybe not, I think the last paperwork or maybe the paperwork we're working on. We mentioned the fact that, we're not just a bunch of people in some small little corner. We're out of every state. We're coming from all 3,130-some-odd counties. And it may be true that with some counties we may not have people in, but we definitely have plenty of people in every state, and we have plenty of people in all the federal districts. So, hey, look it, we're coming in with 5,000 of us just at a minimum to start off with. You know, that's why critical mass is so important. You know, when we hit that critical mass point and that avalanche of people opens up and we start to just load in membership, that's when it's game over for them.
Exactly. It's going to hit a certain point and then it's going to start snowballing.
Yes.
Game absolutely. Over. It's
only a matter of time.
That.
God's in control of that. And and we're rating, you know, look at, we always thought that we would have control over where this case would be that would give us leverage into the courts. And we always thought it would be New York. We always thought we'd have that control. But God had other ideas, I guess, because Oregon came to be, and here we are in Oregon, and we realize now that's ground zero. And so it's all
exactly.
the way, it's 3,000 miles away from us, you know?
Now, just one question on the Eric Gardner case. As far as your knowledge, is there anybody doing anything? Is the mainstream system charging anyone?
No.
Are you kidding me? So no one's been charged still?
Haven't gone. No. Nobody.
Yeah, well,
I don't know. Prosecutor did a song and dance before the grand jury when we looked into this. It just, this guy had to sell the fact that he wasn't guilty to the grand jury when his job was to sell the fact that he was guilty. He took the opposite approach, and he spent time, he just wouldn't let him go until he got the vote he wanted. You see, again, they got their ham sandwich either way they wanted. They always controlled the jury. After all, look at, we've seen situations where the grand jury kind of responds, what a swell guy this guy is, you know? They love the prosecutor because he comes in and he forgazes them and he confers, he empowers them, but he controls them, and they don't see that part of it. And it's all psychological, by the way, because everybody that's on that jury was psychologically chosen. Okay, to be on that jury for whatever cases they're going to put before them, because after all, the state has got to win and get their people in courts into jail so they can make their money. So the whole thing is a setup, but the people have no idea they're being smoozed, and they just love the guy. He's such a great guy. You know?
I thought his widow was going to sue. I thought she had a suit, and I don't know. You know, they could have settled out of court on
like
that,
a wrongful death suit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, even though he didn't get indicted, look at what they did with O.J. He actually was found innocent at the trial, but they found him guilty of murder because the standard is not beyond a reasonable doubt, and they sued the pants off of him, you know?
Right.
Well, it was a code violation to begin with. They arrested and killed him because of a code violation? That's to begin with. And an unconstitutional code violation, might I add.
Right.
Now you're opening up wounds again. I'm starting to get ticked off.
Well, that's what I said. I'm never going to forget about this case. It just makes me sick.
Neither will we. And the thing is, the time is right. If we're not picking up on
it, we're
going to do it.
But if this is not if this is not proof of enough, you see, this alone with this case proves that the system is out of. Remember, there was never anything where they said, okay, sir, you know, we're going to take in, you know, or give him an opportunity. It seems like they just jumped him and that was it. So there was not even, nothing was done correctly. So anyway.
The police force doesn't have jurisdiction. The court that they heard or anything, made any decisions, didn't have jurisdiction. Even the grand jury that was pulled together, which was a puppet grand jury under a jurisdiction that didn't exist, it's a fiction, didn't have jurisdiction. The code, there was no jurisdiction to even maintain the code. The code was illegal and constitutional. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on and on. They have no footing. Let's take Oregon, for instance, okay? Oregon. Let's think about Oregon. Here's the fact of the matter, and you can't remove black and white. You can't remove the facts. They can talk all their mumbo-jumbo, and they can play all their legalese language they want, but when you bring the truth onto the paper, plain and clear, that a territory cannot possibly exist inside of a state, that just removed all jurisdiction of everything and anything the FBI did in that state, and what they did was illegal, unconstitutional, and they are liable for it. They had no authority. Anything they did there, anything, to make arrests, to put these people in jail, to go out after them for fires, which were backfires, to shoot this man, Lavoie, to arrest these people, for anything, because they had no jurisdiction at all. Everything they did was a fraud there, and that's from day one, okay?
Right,
so
to begin with,
bat, the whole case falls apart.
Exactly.
Before you even get to the fact that the man was assassinated. He wasn't murdered. He wasn't just killed or just murdered. He was assassinated.
Excellent. Well, listen, I know there's going to be, it takes precedence over anything right now. So I'll let you get to the next caller, and it's been a pleasure as always.
Thank you, Ed.
All right, see you later.
Okay, next caller ends in quadruple threes, 3333. You're on.
Is it me?
It sounds like you, yes.
This is Terry from Colorado, and
yes.
I wanted to, I'm sorry?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I wanted to emphasize one thing. I think Ammon Bundy and the rest, out of the myriad of mistakes that they did make, they were doing good. And neglecting the fact that they went with Anna, we've already discussed that, Judge Anna, and Joaquin. The other mistake I think he made is that he called for people to come with arms. And
absolutely.
I'm wondering if we shouldn't be on the spot with saying that we are not.
We're on the record that he did it the wrong way. We're on the record for that, okay? But remember this, ultimately, it was a protest, and he made his big mistake of talking arms, and that's got to be retracted. But nevertheless, after that, they did talk about protesting and the fact that it's a protest. And even the congressman out there in Washington that was on the floor and gave his speech said they did it the wrong way and so on and so forth. But it was a protest, okay? It's a protest. Why, you know, as Lavoie put it, the rattling of the saber. Why going through all this? You know, these people are upset. And look at here's the problem. The legislative Washington already knew this. Washington knew this. We've got the transcript of it's got to be 5 hours. And we have the audio, the video also that was done on C-SPAN where Congress was looking into what was going on out west. And they called them. They said that they were terrorists. And they didn't use the word terrorist, but they used the word like Gestapo or something. I forget exactly the words. I had to go back to look. But they were pretty strong words. These people were being literally terrorized by the federal government. The BLM was way out of hand, and they also made reference to the fact that this isn't just something that just coming up. This has been around for quite some time. They're out of control, and look at, they burnt houses, they burnt farm, they burnt ranches, they burnt they burnt cattle. They've destroyed. Look at Lavoie. They sabotaged his water system on a couple occasions. They've robbed his water. They've done everything they can to intimidate and to injure and to just get them off the land. And a lot of ranches left. But look at, Congress has already looked into this, and they've come up with their conclusions. And they were supposed to make law. Okay, I don't know whatever happened to that. They agreed that they needed to make law. See, what they were looking for was what was called a cause of action. When we first started studying law, we learned about causes of actions, and we used that because we thought that's how the process should work, and you had to find a cause of action, and you had to find something that's kind of recorded. So they were looking for a cause of action. Hey, look, what about U.S. 42 as a cause of action? What about U.S. 18? What's wrong with Congress that they don't know that there's a cause of action already, number one? And number two, you know what a cause of action is? The United States Supreme Court has already ruled on it numerous times what a cause of action is. A sworn affidavit. Cause of action, end of subject, nothing else to talk about. So you don't need some magic words or a group of words or try to make a certain point, 3 points that you have to meet and 2 have to hit or whatever the case may be on all that BS. Look it, if there's an injury, got to be a remedy, end of subject, nothing else to talk about. If there is no injury, there is no common law action at all anyway, and it doesn't matter. And there is no other court in the United States that has the Constitution or the legality to operate. The chancery courts don't have the operational powers. It's illegal, it's unconstitutional, and in my opinion, it's an assault against the American people. It's subversion, because they're taking people and putting people in jail in courts that have no authority to do so. The only court that has the power and the authority to incarcerate or to fine is a court of record. And a court of record is one that proceeds according to the common law. None of those courts proceed according to the common law. They're chancery. They're not courts of record. They have no power to incarcerate. They have no power to fine. And yet they do every day, day in and day out. That's subversion against the people of the United States of America. That's subversion and warring against the Constitution. And look at, if they continue on their path, as far as I'm concerned, they're all going to be indicted. Every single judge out there is going to be indicted. When they start to turn around and repent and get behind the people, well, we're good to forgive them. But they're still going to have to deal with their past.
With all of that.
Huh?
I agree with all that. The thing is that I see a lot of people writing a lot of articles, and they're completely clueless. And
right.
If we commit ourselves to nonviolence so we don't have guns there, we might be taken advantage of, but the court of public opinion will turn to favor us, and I think that will help us. That's
right.
Let me just say something. You know, I grew up in Arizona. I was out there 5 years, and I just went back out west recently. People open carry there all the time. Nobody gets squirrely when they see a gun. He didn't have to mention guns. What he should have said is we were having, you know, a sit-in or whatever. And people just open carry. You don't ask permission. You just do it. People still have guns in the back windows of their truck over there. It's a much looser, you know, it's not like you're riding through New York City with a shotgun in your back window and they go crazy and they have fits. Out there, you just open carry because you do. And that's what happens. They made their mistake when they set up that Committee of Safety. And one of the authorities of the Committee of Safety, and the Committee of Safety is a traditional common law thing that they used it on the frontier, but they used them also in the colonial days. And one of the things they could do is they could call up the militia. Well, that sentence was put in there, and that drove them crazy. When they saw the Committee of Safety could call the militia, that's what made the fire chief join. He said, look, if there's a committee that can call a militia up and start a revolution, he said, you better darn well believe that I'm going to be on there so I can prevent a revolution. You know what I mean? So there was a couple things done wrong, but you know, and Ammon said something very profound, though. He said, if we didn't do something, this would become the new normal. He said, look, and the other thing is if you're on a jury and you have to decide whether they're innocent or guilty or whatever, one of the things that you take into consideration is the intent. Did he have an intent to break the law? Absolutely not. If you walked a mile in his shoes, you would understand why he did, because he believed there was no due process available. And he's actually, essentially, he's right. If you look at the paperwork, if you look at everything he filed, if you look at how they treated it, my goodness gracious, if you didn't know about common law or anything else,
he was right. Look, it's time for the militia as far as he was concerned. And I understand exactly why he felt that way. You know, it wasn't an unreasonable conclusion, okay?
Yeah, I agree. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, but you're right. We shouldn't be calling for guns. And he did take that back later. You know what I mean? He did try to tame that down a little bit. And he said, oh, we're just here open carrying because we can. And that's what we do. But it was already too late. The damage was done. You know what I mean? And they're never going to let him live that down. Oh, you called for an open rebellion with weapons. They call them weapons. With weapons, right? So, you know, regardless. But you know what? He can also counter and say, well, every time you come out, you guys come out and repping in full military regalia. What do you think we're going to do? You know?
Yep.
So anyway, your point's well taken. And you're right, you know, the Gandhi effect was no weapons. It was just people sitting down, right, and inundating.
Yeah.
And so that's very powerful, but, you know, the poor guy up front, he's got to get run over. He's got to get run over by the tank, right? Somebody's going to get squished at some point. But, you know, they can't hold up to it. Remember that guy, that Chinese guy standing in front of the tank at Tiananmen Square?
Yes, and I believe in Gandhi and Martin Luther King, and they were all about pledging nonviolence. And I think
right. The
public will come with us. And I agree with everything you said, Gerard and John. Thank you. I yield my time.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, what do we have here? It looks like Michigan Jan.
Hey, Jan.
Is that you again, Jan?
Oh, God is love, let me tell you. I just wanted to make clear some of the things that I've experienced. There are many churches out there in the world, Christian churches, and the Christian churches all have God's people in them. But on the other hand, they all also have Satan's people in them. So you have God's people and Satan's people, the wheat and the tares.
Right.
And Jesus Christ is the one that's going to come and take care of those wicked people in them churches. So I feel anyone out there that's going to Catholic church, Baptist church, Congregational church, any Christian church, God's people are there. And I encourage everyone to be going to some kind of church and studying their word. And God will show you what church you need to be in eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some people say, well, this church is C4 or whatever. I forget how that USC thing is or whatever.
501(c)(3), which is a very insidious thing.
Yeah, well, still, you know, we're not a perfect people, and there's no such thing as a perfect church.
Well, let me tell you something. That's like saying you shouldn't have a driver's license. But, you know, churches got 501(c)(3), but churches don't need 501(c)(3). That's a lie from hell. And President Johnson put in there that they could not engage in the activity of propaganda. Well, propaganda is not only, well, now they interpret that as you can't talk against the government, you can't tell the people who to vote for, but the word propaganda comes from the propagation of the faith. So they could essentially come in there, especially today, now that we've had these Supreme Court rulings saying that you can't discriminate and that you got to do same-sex marriages, you got to do this, you got to do that. Technically, they can come in, you say the wrong thing, somebody comes to you and they want to get married and you refuse to marry them or anything like that, they can pull your 501(c), and when they pull your 501(c), they declare your organization a scam, and they go back all through the years, all the deductions that you got. And don't forget, it's not only the taxes exempt that you got, but you had people give you money, and those people took it off of their taxes. You see, nobody's giving to the churches today. It's the government giving to the churches, because these corporations that give to churches, they give to them because they get a bigger tax write-off. So who's really supporting the church? It's the government. Unless you're going to give over what you can deduct, you're really not giving. You're just being selfish, because they got a tax code that makes it, look, you either give it to the church or the government takes it away. And so you give it to the church and you get to write off a little more and you get to keep more of your money. But what that does is it puts the government in control. It puts the carrot on the string, and they tell them,
you better not talk about this and you better not talk about that. Or they tell them, preach Romans that you gotta be subservient to the government because God put the government here, and they take that whole thing out of context. It's very, very insidious. And in my opinion, in this day and age, that everybody understands what the government is doing, that any pastor that's worth his salt should know that he can't serve two masters, because that 501(c) is his master, and it really is. And they'll come in and they'll tell you, don't say this and don't say that. And guess what? They won't either, because if they do, they're out in the street with the clothes on their back. And it's a horrible thing. And really, there's a different kind of a tax exemption that you can get as a religion. Churches never pay taxes, and they never filled out any government things. That story about Patrick Henry and the guy who was getting whipped till his ribs showed out, they wanted him to take a license for preaching. That was your first 501(c) right there. That's the Paul Harvey rest of the story. They wanted him to take a license to be a certified preacher. Who says that the state can determine who's a man of God and who's not? They're going to license that?
But what year was that? That guy getting beat for that 501(c).
Well, when was Patrick Henry here? That was in the 1700s.
They were, way back then, they started that 501(c).
Well, it wasn't a 501(c). It was a local municipality or something. They were still under England, and they were beating the guy because he refused to take a license. Now, they didn't call it a 501(c). They didn't call it a tax exemption, but it was a license through the county or whatever they had back then, the shire. I don't know, that whatever England had set up as a government here, which was a military government, the people got together and they decided to license the preachers. Now, there's nothing new under the sun, Jan. This has all been done before. They had the Patriot Act back then, because when the king said, arrest them, and the general said, I can't arrest them, because every time I do, they get a jury of their peers, and they get off. They know more law than I do. The biggest selling book back then was Black's Law Dictionary. And so the king said, arrest them and put them in a boat and send them over here and we'll convict them. That was the Patriot Act. Yeah, it took them 3 months to get across the ocean. People could think a lot more on the trip there, and they wrote a lot. You know, today they pick you up and they throw you in the back of a paddy wagon, they throw you on a plane, and in 6 hours you're in Guantanamo because you're a terrorist, you know. But this is nothing new under the sun. Every tyrant, the king was a tyrant, your president is a tyrant, and they all have the same MO, the same method of operation, all of them. And this whole 501(c), I'm telling you right now, I'm at the point that you got to preach to your preachers. They got to understand that this is going to lock the churches down. This is the government going to tell them what to do, and it's a controlling thing. And I'll tell you what, you should see the tax return you fill out with a 501(c). They want to know how many sets of underwear you're buying for your clerics and all that other stuff. It's ridiculous. It's really bad. It's insidious. And I've gotten to the point that I can't even bring myself anymore. You know, I feel like I'm doing something wrong by going to somebody that has a contract with this government, this evil government that's run. They're ruled by Satan right now. I'm sorry. You know, we have information of stuff, pedophile rings that go up to the White House. They do child sacrifice. Well, you're going to take a blessing and an exemption from these people? Think about it. Think about it.
Yeah, but this is the Christian church. I'm not about a satanic church now.
No, but the Christian church is taking the satanic 501(c) from the satanic government that's giving them the money to operate on. They're feeding at the trough of this government.
It's not perfect. I figured some truth, eventually find more truth.
It's worse than not perfect. It's evil. And the thing is I don't hold them accountable now, but you send letters and you talk to them, and see what you're doing is you're removing their invincible ignorance. They should know. And if they don't know, you should tell them. And once you tell them, they should do something. Look up Reverend, what's his name, the one that moved to Montana there, got rid of his 501(c), ran for president there in the Libertarian Party. What the heck's his name? I'm having a brain hemorrhage here. He's in Montana right now, but he has lots of videos where he speaks about this, and he uses scriptures to show you that how evil this is and how he came to the realization and why he left Florida and a church that was thriving with lots of money, and he went to Montana and gave everything up because it was so insidious what they were doing. You know,
when you find that
Baldwin, Chuck Baldwin.
21 minutes.
Chuck Baldwin.
Chuck Baldwin. Look into it. I'll send you information. I don't want to take too much time.
Okay, Skype it over.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you. And we're going to go to New York, Peter.
How are you tonight?
Good, good. What's up, Peter?
I want to comment, say a little bit about the interview you did with Drake. Excellent.
Thank you.
A little bit about Drake's work. I've been following him since his first interview with David. And the military wants to know if we have their back. That is really what Drake's work is. And about we the people, do we stand behind our military? So I want to just talk about a powerful white hat that likes us, promotes us. His name is General Joe Dunsford, and he's the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And whether or not what they do, as long as they're doing it legally and constitutionally, I think there's a beta test whether or not we the people support them. And I think that they've had a question in their mind for a few years now whether or not we back the military to arrest these illegal impersonators that have been holding us all hostage. So there's a bit of a discussion that, again, how they do it, what they're doing. But I do have to at least put a kudos out to this brave man, General Joe Dunsford, who speaks very highly of us and says, join the NLA. He's a common law guy. And I just want to put that out there. There's a white hat out there that's high, he's that high up, and that I think we can count on him if we need someone in the highest office. And I think the Joint Chiefs of Staff are looking out for we the people. I don't know how the power...
I'd like to make a note, though. We copy the Joint Chief of Staff in our paperwork, so they get copies of everything we get. Yeah,
right. Yeah, they got to know where we're at. The only thing we've said is, look, we the people would want to do it while we can. We don't want to bring the military in unless it's the last straw. And look, we're kind of at the last straw. They need to back us up. When they see us moving into the courts and they see us going to the courts with law enforcement, I don't care if it's one sheriff or 35 sheriffs, the Joint Chiefs of Staff need to get behind that. We would prefer it that way than they actually go and arrest the president, because the trouble with the military doing it is it puts them in control. It's like a coup, and it's very dangerous because you got all those factions on top. And I'm not saying that will happen, but there's a danger there. You know what I mean? But they know what we're doing. What's that?
So, I'm sorry I interrupted. I'm just saying, I believe that's exactly what they're scared of, is that if they went to go make a move, that we the people wouldn't be educated enough or know enough that they're doing it for the right reasons, and here they're hanging out there and could be tried for treason executed.
And
I think we need to just see what this general has been doing in his own work. He works with the Republic people, and they're trying to create a way.
Well, one of the things that they might want to keep an eye on is when the sheriffs move, and believe me, they're going to move eventually, when they move, that they back the sheriffs up, because you see, if they're backing the sheriffs up, then the people will see them in the right light. Not to take control over it, but only to back them up, if necessary, and only when called upon. Because ultimately, the way we secure a free state is with the militia.
Well, these are all great right. discussions we need to keep having.
Exactly. And there was another point I was going to make. I lost my train of thought here as far as they go. Oh, in the same token, we're not ready for a shooting war either, because the average person is not educated enough. You know what I mean? If we had enough people educated, it would be much safer. I mean, right now, even in what do you call it, in Burns over there where this all took place, you got 50% of the people, they work for the government, they work for the BLM, they work for all these ABC agencies, the businesses were all put out, they got the unions, and so you end up with them, go home, you know what I mean, they're fighting, they're too ignorant yet, they don't understand that ultimately the people that feed them are going to be the ones that end up killing them. You know, everybody that facilitates the takeover of a country, all those people in government that facilitate, like this is when the communists come into a country and they subvert a country, and this is what they used to do. They would come in and they would subvert, you know, the colleges and everything and the thoughts of that. When they come in, who do they take out? They take out all those people that helped them come in, because they figure, look, you turned on your own countrymen. We certainly can't trust you, right? You facilitated us getting in, but we're done with you. We need to get rid of you because we can't trust you, right? And that's what's going on. And look at that's again. That's feeding from the trough of the government. They have those people. They closed the lumber mills. They closed the mines. They closed all this stuff, right? And so then what do? They put them to work as Bureau of Land Management and all these different ABC agencies, you know. And that's nice, but you know what? They're not producing anything. You know what I mean?
Right.
They're not producing anything. That money's coming out of our pockets. It's all well and good to protect the birds and the fish and all this stuff, but you have people dying and moving out and leaving, and they have to work for the government. Look at this country, this America right now. I think it's like almost a half and half thing where 50% of the people or more work for the government in one way, shape, or form. And that's a method of control. When everybody's feeding from the government trough, guess what? You're going to do what they tell you to do, because they'll turn the food off. You know what I mean?
Correct.
So it's a very insidious thing.
I'll mention our other greatest allies right now are the Indian nations. And I'll put a prayer out to them also.
Absolutely.
We're just realizing it now. You know, they've been dealing with their cattle and horses being killed in their land. You know, they've been dealing with it for so long. I know there's been some racist stuff coming, you know, that, you know, they still don't trust the white man. And I hope that we can come together as
and they're a sovereign people. They have a treaty that backs them up. They have their own courts. We talked about maybe they could be our salvation at some point, going into their court.
I believe that they are, matter of fact, because they have schooled themselves. They haven't been in our system. I think they're a little wiser than us on many issues, especially if their spirit is so deeply connected to.
Right, you know, right. And they've kind of maintained their standing in a certain sense, you know what I mean, by being those people under that treaty. And look at, they, if anybody was born on the land, it was them, right? You want to go there, right?
So this is the time. This is the time we all stand together. And
look, it's coming. It's coming. It's going to come full circle. And when it does come, if it comes right, if it's God's will and it comes right, I think you're going to see all those little pieces drop into place, including the military. I really do. Look, we have to keep the international thing out, though. We can't have other countries coming in here to try to straighten things out, because you're going to end up with chaos. You know what I mean? I don't know.
My understanding is there are white hats that have been working in the military since the Korean War that have been poising for
11
this
minutes.
Moment. They've been waiting for this moment, and some very wise people that have been working on this, and we may not ever know their faces or see who they are, but they've done the groundwork for us already. You know, this is stuff that Drake has educated me on.
Yeah.
And this is the time. We're ready.
Yeah.
Get her done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you.
Actually, that was Carl Miller was the one. They taught him the Constitution in the military. That was, you know, so we know they're there. Okay, Connecticut Crystal, go ahead.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm not in Connecticut. My name's Tanya, and I'm in San Jose, California.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I just wanted to
tell you. Well,
I'm
just
fine. How are you?
Okay.
That's okay. Anyways, I do have a question. My one question is, so the whole thing about the Constitution and unalienable rights and being an American, what if you're not an American citizen, like, and you only have a green card? Does it still apply? Do you still have all those rights?
Absolutely. Look, I get so incensed when people say, oh, this guy, he's from Mexico, and he did this or that, and he shouldn't have the right to a lawyer. Look, our rights are unalienable because they come from God. They don't come from the country. It's an ideal, you know? We don't hand them out. They're a birthright. And the only thing that somebody who's not born here might not have access to are those things that we pay for that we get, like Social Security. They give it away anyway, but you know what I mean. In other words, we're paying into Social Security all these years, and then you have people come over and they take out of that system and they pay them. But anybody that comes over here is technically covered by our laws. You know, look, if you go to China or you go to Thailand and you break their law, guess what? You're going to be covered they're going to prosecute you under their law. Well, in America, you're going to get prosecuted under American law, but you're going to be afforded all the rights that an American citizen has. We don't hand those rights out. They're our birthright, you know? Now, maybe that person can't vote because they haven't been naturalized and things like that, and we have to be careful about not letting maybe other countries come in and subvert our government. But just because you're here on a green card doesn't mean that we can abuse you and do human rights violations. Our Constitution says all men are created equal. That's it. End of discussion. You know?
Okay. So, yeah, I just wanted to know because I'm in my federal case, I'm arguing my constitutional rights, and I thought about it a few times. I'm like, gosh, I want to double check and make sure that they fully apply to me. Like, I can't vote. But I do know this, that I can't vote, but having a green card, I'm assuming all rights are the same as if I would be American citizen.
Right, right. And the Constitution really doesn't give you your rights. The Constitution's just the contract we have with the government. You had your rights come for their natural rights. And it took me a long time to stop saying my constitutional rights. The Constitution is the contract that the people have with the government that tells the government what they can or can't do. Well, the Constitution tells them how to do it, and the Bill of Rights tells them what they can't do. And so that's just something to remember, you know. And they don't have a right to say that you don't have a certain human right, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a certain commercial right or the right to vote might be, you know, you might not have, but in everything else, they it's not theirs to give or take. You know what I mean? So
yeah. Okay.
I hope that helps.
That does help. Thank you. And I do have one more quick question.
Mm-hmm.
So in my, I have a really quick question. In our family law divorce case, to make a long story short, on record, I agreed to a settlement agreement, but the settlement agreement, it's been 2 months and they finally provided it, the opposing counsel, and I changed my mind. I don't want to sign the settlement agreement, and my attorney is saying that I have to because I agreed on record. So he's telling me that it's Code of Civil Procedure 664.6, and I did ask him what are my rights, and he doesn't want to answer them. I just wanted to know if there's anything that you could.
Boy, I don't. That's like.
Yeah. No. Look, that's a contract, and you have 72 hours. You could change your mind on any contract after you sign it.
I didn't sign.
Well, look.
I'm just saying, though.
Right. She didn't sign it, and they took time returning it, which means they were probably changing it. So it's not a contract.
I don't know if they were changing the settlement agreement. I'm not sure if it's that, but they took 2 months to provide it, which is not okay. But the thing is, just because I said on record I agree, he's holding me to that. Like, I believe that if I didn't sign anything, I have some rights, right?
Absolutely correct. Yeah. And it's going to be an uphill battle for you, though, if you want to hold your ground. But you're absolutely correct. Look at... It doesn't become a contract till your signature is on it, and what? How much time passed between the time you said you were willing and now they're trying to get you to sign it? How much time passed?
Well, actually, so what happened was it was on December the 3rd that this happened. We had a trial, but it turned into a settlement agreement.
All right. Well, let me ask you another question. I got that. Now, the next question is from the agreement point, has anything changed in the agreement when they wrote it down? Any just the littlest dot or tittle?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, because that would have made it better and stronger, because for sure there's no problem there. But look, you have so many hours after signing to pull out of any agreement on anything. And so you haven't even signed it. So
no, I haven't. And I asked him so many times, I said, okay, what are my rights because I didn't sign this? And he keeps saying, well, under this Code of Civil Procedure, it says that actually Code of Civil Procedure says if parties to pending litigation stipulate in a writing signed by the parties outside the presence of the court or orally before the court for settlement of the case or part thereof, the court, upon motion, may enter judgment pursuant to the terms of the jurisdiction over the parties to enforce the settlement until performance in full of the terms of the settlement. That's what he said I'm binded by. And I don't think that's true. And I'm trying to...
Have you had a trial yet?
Well, that's the thing. That was our trial, and the judge ended up changing it and turned it into a settlement agreement, which we had just 2 weeks before, and I refused to settle. And so we had a trial set.
First of all, there's numerous things. First of all, they're acting under a different form of law. They're not acting under the Constitution to begin with, under American jurisprudence, they're acting as an equity court. And since the trial hasn't really began yet, you can say, I want a common law trial. And that means you get a jury. And because it's over $20. If the value of the argument is over $20, you get you can have a jury, a trial by jury.
Okay. That's what I should ask my attorney?
Well, he's gonna say the same thing anyway. It's a difficult
don't
thing.
Don't ask him. Tell him.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I have been telling him what to do.
Why don't you talk to another attorney?
I'm sorry. No, I can't change attorneys now. I'm not able to, because this isn't going on for 5 years. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to see how I can deal with this nonsense that just doesn't end. And I know that I have to eventually finish my habeas corpus with you. It's like I know that I need to do that. I came to this point now. See, the thing is, we had a settlement conference on the 18th of November, and I told him that I didn't agree and I want to go to trial, which was already set 3 months prior. We get to court, and my judge says, he gives some nonsense like, well, you know, I can't have any more 3-day trials in our courtroom, and just in case this turns into a 3-day trial. Well, as soon as my attorney heard that, he rode that carpet ride like, well, this definitely is going to be a 3-day trial, which would send us to another court, another 4 months out. You know, that's what happened, Dave.
Listen, if you're gonna agree to an oral contract in court by orally, I mean, at what point did the contract actually get read to you and you say, I agree?
At the end of the day.
So they
like
read
after
the
they
harassed
well, look,
me all day
nevertheless,
long.
No matter what happens, we don't want to get too lost in a case here. We,
yeah,
we get
no,
too
I know.
Deep,
I'm just
but look,
to,
whatever I... happens, it's an uphill. It's an uphill battle. If you take the battle, if you do a habeas corpus, it's still an uphill battle. Remember that.
Well, I'm trying to. I can't see how I would be binded by this oral thing when I didn't sign anything. So I don't get it. Like there must be something to protect me.
Right. I agree. I agree. Look at that. That code doesn't amount to a hill of beans, ultimately, because the Supreme Court has already ruled on this. And you haven't even signed any. There's no binding contract yet.
Right.
A verbal contract.
What would protect me then? What would protect me, Mr. Darash? Like, what can I
say
to him?
Well, again, you know, me, I take all my arguments to jurisdiction. But, you know, you have a problem taking it to jurisdiction because you're in the game already. You spent a lot of money, I'm sure, on an attorney. Mm-hmm. And you're almost down, all the way down where you want to be. But now you want to go to a trial because you don't want the settlement. It's an uphill battle. I don't, you got to know what you're doing to be able to fight these people. And even knowing what you're doing doesn't mean you're going to win them.
Yeah, but he's my lawyer. He's supposed to defend me. Like, that's what I said to him. I said,
yeah, well, I would let him know, look, we're going to go through this trial. You're going to push me in this way, and let you know one thing. When this is done, I'm suing you. I mean, that's another thing to do.
I could tell him that straight up, eh?
Sure,
yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah,
I'm
going to
sue you at the end of this because you're not really representing me.
Yeah, you're telling me. Look, we went in for a trial, and you let them harangue me into a settlement. That's not what I paid you for.
Exactly, and that's what I told him. I wrote this beautiful, my friend, she helped me out. We wrote this beautiful letter, and it was solid and really, you know, solid, okay? And he came back with some nonsense, and just, I mean, it just didn't even make sense.
Just,
and
you
I was
know what
like,
you
well,
do?
Look at,
send a letter back and ask him for the name of his insurance company. That'll fix it.
Let me ask you a question.
Well, the thing is, he keeps insisting, well, you know, you sit in front of Judge Christopher Rudy. Yeah, you know what I want to tell him? You tell my judge to go ahead and take this on because I'm going to hit him with this 18 U.S. Code 253 or 254, whatever that oath of office that he took where he's supposed to, uphold the Constitution. Let him take me on, I swear, because I'm so done with this nonsense. Well, I'll be happy to fight with them. That's no problem.
Well, let me just ask a question here. What percentage is the settlement to what you really want? I mean, is it 75% of what you want to really get?
Oh, my God. It's nothing what I want. Actually, I'm in a lot of trouble if I take the settlement. It's like
tell them you're refusing and look at if you push this through and if the judge forces me through and you want to go through this, I'm just going to have to I'll take what I can get out of here, and I'm going to move on, and I'm going to see you and the judge for the rest plus damages, and I'll take you into federal court. Now, that's if you really mean it, though. I mean, I don't know if you're capable of doing that.
Oh,
but
yeah,
with that, we've
done,
come
yeah,
to the
I'm,
end
I'd
of our
I'd be glad
here,
to do that. That's no problem, right? But I just, you know, he just is so argumentative. If he would have fought for me, like, really hard, like he's arguing with me right now in trial, then I would have been way further ahead than I am now. But I don't know what his deal is, why he just refuses to totally defend me, you know.
The other lawyer and the judge and him get in the room, or they play golf, or they have dinner, and they decide where they're going to go before you ever get into court. I hate to tell you, but that's
actually
true.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%.
With that, we're going to have to end it because we're going way beyond time.
Oh,
so.
I'm sorry. Okay, that's
all right. Appreciate the call. We'll be back next Monday. There was a couple of people we didn't get to. As a matter of fact, just three. But look at next week. We'll call in the people who didn't have that opportunity to get in tonight. We'll get
you
in
first. We got LaVoy Fickham on the dial.
Yeah. All right. With that, we're going to end this thing. So thanks, everyone, for coming. And Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And please get involved. Come to the meetings. And one other thing, you know, look at what we're doing right here is financed by a small handful of people, and we're all poor. None of us have money. There is no big people with big money giving us money. So, look, every penny we can get counts. So those of us who are not giving, please consider giving $5 a month or more. Help us do what we have to do. Okay, with that, good night, everyone, and we will see you next Monday, Lord willing. And we're going to end with a song that had something to do with a little bit earlier on we were speaking about. You probably recognize this, Gerard.
Okay.
stop.